Talk Shoes. Recorded live.
Hello, this is William Fink, and it's February 4th, 2010, and this is the Christogenia Euro Fellowship call. Hello, everybody. Hello, Matthew.
Hi, here we are.
Yeah.
Stand by.
Yeah, well, I'm sure that Tia Teffy and Sussex Man will be calling in shortly.
Tia Teffy in, and either guest three, four, or two. One of the guests, June, maybe the first.
I had a very difficult time getting into Talk Show today.
Hey, is it?
I had a very hard time getting into Talk Show today. It took me about 15 or 20 tries. I kept trying with Firefox, and I gave up, and I went to Internet Explorer, and I tried with that a few times and gave up and went back to Firefox. And the second time I went back to Firefox, it worked on the first shot.
Oh, that's strange. That is new. It looks like when I'm starting this show, I couldn't come in at all. Finally, I found the right way, and then I could come in by the computer, because the telephone doesn't work for this. It's not possible from my home on. And that's probably only from England, because these nasty, peculiar, extra figures on the machine don't work on the telephone. You have to pay for it extra, and then they will connect it. I don't need it.
Only in Germany would you have to pay extra money for an extra button.
Oh, sure.
I would imagine that to happen in Tel Aviv. I can't imagine it to happen in Bavaria. I'm sorry. That's weird.
Even.
Well,
but I'm used to it.
Then they want you to pay extra money. That sounds like the AT&T of yore in America. That sounds like
right.
The AT&T of the 70s that I know.
Yeah, right. Oh, TATV is also open. Hey, that's good. That's good. I wonder, we were busy with her for the silver water, to do some with silver water. But the problem was for silver water to find out how we can see and measure the amount of particles in, because it's just not, all the measurement devices are using the concentration of the salts in it, but not the particles. Measuring the particles is very difficult, and the only thing you can do. No, that is for the colloidal silver, that water. That's what we are busy with. We would like to have it, the measurement of how much of these particles are in. And you can only do that optically, by optical measurement. That's why I'm now thinking about how to do it. It just takes some time to find out. we'll find a real solution for that. Yeah. And
I don't
see
that
the TV is open. It's colloidal silver. But it's very nice material, and it's very healthy, and it works fine. Who is that number one?
Hello, June.
That's June, huh?
Hello.
Hello.
Yeah.
Of course.
Hello, evening,
June.
Number one here.
And Sussex Man is there as well.
Right.
I've got my friend Sussex Man in with me.
Oh, okay. You're all right.
I'm June.
Two for the price of one, that works.
Two for the price of one, yes. It's good to
That's
be part of the fellowship.
Well, we have a half price sale on Brits today.
Yes, good.
Tia Teffy, are you there? Can you hear us?
We can hear from here. I'm hearing Matthew.
Right.
Judith, can you hear me? She's
sure.
Yes, I can hear you, Bill.
No, I
no,
meant
she's, Judith.
Oh, Judith, sorry.
She's on the call, but I haven't heard anything from her. I don't.
Yeah.
I knew she was planning to be listening in.
All right. She's having the same problem that I had on Monday with TalkShoe Pro, where I used TalkShoe Pro to get into the call, and nobody could hear me, even though the software told me my microphone was working. And she's going
she's
to...
Pretty good.
She's going to
yeah,
have to, there's something broken with TalkShoe Pro, Judith. I'm sorry. I know
yeah.
it worked. It worked perfect for you a couple of weeks ago. I understand that. But it didn't work for me Monday, and it's not working for you now.
Hey, strange. First, you're speaking. Yeah. So that's what I'm using. She's saying, okay. But we don't hear her.
Well, I know that's what she's using as soon as she said I'm speaking, you know, because I had the same problem Monday. I started the weekly Monday
Crazy.
Night call that I do on TalkShoe Pro. I had finally gotten it to work because I tried many times. I couldn't even get the software up, you know, with previous programs. I'm on a telephone right now. I would much rather be on the VoIP because the quality is usually a lot better than a telephone line.
That's right.
And it would free up my phone.
Well, so the good thing is with the if you can go in through TalkShoe through your computer, you can have your headphones on and the mic, and you've got your hands free to be doing other jobs.
Yeah, that's possible. But I prefer only one thing at the same time. I'm more on the careful side. That's why I don't have music on when I'm busy here with the oscilloscope and repairing. That's the whole problem.
I think Chris is talking about getting a cup of tea poured out when he doesn't have when he has the headphones on. He has no difficulty. But when you have to hold the telephone,
there's
a disadvantage.
Yeah.
Judith is having a hard time now.
And is there any signs of Betty there?
Not yet. I can't see her. Not yet.
Is well with her.
Oh, she will come in.
I
have guest three and guest four. So we are nine persons. A 10 was the master.
Well, I see 5, so my screen must be frozen. So I'm quitting it and coming back in.
Okay, that could be.
If you count 9 people and I see 5, there's a problem. That's talk. TalkShoe is nothing but problems. I'm sorry. I came back in and I still only see 5 people. So Matthew, you must have double vision or something. I'm sorry.
Yeah, but it's not normal to me. Mostly I have problems because the connection is always so poor, and that connection will be improved, but that's first of all at autumn time, because they have to install a new cable from village to village before I'll get the whole opportunity of the internet connection. I'm just
so
at the end of the
cable.
So what
do we want to talk about?
That's my unlucky thing.
Do we want to talk about that person that's trying to get me to take all this data off one of my websites or what?
Well, you could certainly talk about that later. I thought, you know, as a point of interest, I had an email from a new contact in the south of England. I won't mention his name on the phone. He was asking various questions. I think he came across us via the new Your Christogenia site. And he says, dear Chris, this is, I'm reading backwards. There were other questions. The last one I got, dear Chris, is there a Christian identity version of the scriptures as there appears to be a version of the New Testament called Christogenia New Testament? Is this available from you? If so, can I buy a copy, please? Every blessing in Yahweh. I don't know if you got any published yet, Bill.
There is. I do not have a hard copy published, but I hate to do it, but I'm really thinking about going to Lulu and getting my the New Testament put up by them, published by them.
Oh, that's a good idea.
I couldn't do anything until I got a copyright certificate from the Library of Congress. I didn't want to do anything until I got the actual certificate. The Library of Congress here is getting terrible. Well, when I was 18, 17, 18, 19 years old, I used to write poetry, right? And I have a couple of volumes of poetry copyrighted that I no longer have the poetry. And it's stuff I wrote when I was a kid. And that's what I did when I was a kid. I was pseudo-intellectual then, too. I'm kidding. But, well, you know, I'd send off for a copyright, and I'd have it back in 6 or 8 weeks. I'd have a certificate back. And then when I copyrighted my Letters of Paul in 1995, I sent off for the copyright by mail, and I had a certificate back in 3 or 4 months.
So,
and when I copyrighted the records of Luke, my Luke translation and notes, in 1997, it took 18 months to get a copyright certificate.
Yeah.
And at that time, I had also sent off 2 books of my essays, my historical essays, because a lot of my historical and biblical essays are copyrighted also. And I copyright them not to keep other people from copywriting them, from copying them. I copyright them to keep other people from copywriting them. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah.
I copywrote 2 books of my historical essays and my biblical essays, and it took 1.5 years to get the certificates back. Now, they claim that you'll get the certificate a lot faster if you copyright it and submit it electronically. So last March 20th, I copyrighted and submitted electronically the Christogenian New Testament. Mm-hmm. And I got the certificate back yesterday. It took 11.5 months.
Yeah.
It's crazy. The bureaucracy, I mean, it used to take 6 to 8 weeks. And even in 1995, it took 3 or 4 months. And now it takes anywhere from 11.5 months to 18.
Yeah, yeah.
It's the United States bureaucracy is
it's crazy.
Well, I know who they're hiring. You know, they're the biggest equal opportunity employer in the world. And I guess they're not hiring anybody that wants to actually do something.
Mm-hmm.
That's the way I look at it. I mean, I could be wrong, but I've been in government buildings, and I doubt if I'm wrong. It's all you're going to find are refugees from New Orleans working there.
Yeah.
I'm sure.
And other places.
Yeah, right.
But hopefully there will be one eventually. But nevertheless, it can still be viewed on screen, online, can't it, at your site?
Right. Well, I finally have a copyright certificate back, and I wanted to ensure that before I did anything, and I might go to Lulu and get my New Testament published with them. And if that works out, I'll think about the other stuff. But.
Well, that's a good thing, Eddie. Something to wait for.
Yeah, I'm thinking about it. I'm going to have to take a day next week and investigate it, and I've been given it serious consideration. But I have to resize the pages and do some other editorial things before I do it.
Yeah, okay. There's always a lot of work involved.
Right. But in the meantime, I mean, he could go and download all the PDFs, Chris. I mean, they're all free. I mean, they're on my site. And if he wants one PDF, he could go to Christogenia.com and spend $5 and download one, you know, the whole Christogenia New Testament in one PDF.
Right. I think Judith mentioned that it's a very good idea, you know, when looking at your New Testament, to have the King James alongside.
Well, it always is. I totally agree. I totally agree.
To see what the differences are, and then, as she says, she marks them in her Bible, you know.
Right. And or the Mofar. Many of the differences are inconsequential. 90% of the differences are inconsequential. You're right, Henry. Yeah. The King James is a lousy translation.
Did you?
Yeah, you know, I wrote a little thing on my website about why I quote the King James in some of my papers, and I compare it to the water in New York City. It's terrible. It's loaded with fluoride. It's loaded with chlorine. Everybody knows that it's no good for you, but you know that it's the same everywhere you go in the city.
Yeah.
You know, you're getting the same product. It's consistent, you know.
Yeah,
and
it's definitely terrible, but you know what you're quoting.
Presumably, the German Lutheran Bible would be equally flawed as the King James, would it?
The original is questionable. The original, if you have the original, that's a special name. That's a very good one. They say so. I haven't had it. Yeah. I want to buy it, but it was
Martin
so tedious.
It was supposed to be one of the best translations, but presumably he would have translated it from the Masoretic text, just as the King James translators did.
Maybe, yeah. I don't know what he had as an opportunity in his days, what was available. Did he have the Greek text, or real Greek text, or did he have the Hebrew text? I don't know. I have no idea about it. I heard about it only so far. It seems that it is on the internet available today's times. I read a story about it. It comes from Leipzig. And it seems to be opportunable. You can read it. But it is then the original German version. And it would be an interesting thing to do so. But so far I didn't have the time. But I can think about it to see whether you can get it. And you can download it completely. I don't know how many pages that it is in total. There'll be more than 1,000, I suppose. Maybe that's better by the end of the year, because if I'm going to do it now, it'll take more than an hour or so. That's correct. I just copy 265 pages of a manual from Tektronix, and it took 40 minutes. Now, well, then you can see what's going to happen. If it is 1,000, that's 4 times as long. I can't do it from here on. I have to do that next time, or at autumn time anyway. But then it's worth it to copy it. Then it's also interesting for checking.
Would you do this would be an old German, would it? So?
No. They translated it from, it's readable modern German. That means the changes in the text, but it's not old German because few only can read it still. And the old German from 1500 is even more difficult to read. This is it's in the modern, call it the Latin way of writing, and not anymore of the old German gotical way of writing. I still can read it, but it takes time. It's a bit difficult, but you can read it and you can learn. You can use it as a study object. That works. It's very fine. What is that? 1 plus most, 1/8 version, Lutheran 1.5.7. Yeah, that could be. Yeah, that's about what it is. Little gateway. Yeah, that's right. That's what it is indeed. I'm interested in hearing what Bill thinks on the literal translation. I don't know. I've heard about it, but I haven't had it in hands. There's so much you can buy. I haven't seen it. She is saying I haven't seen it. Okay, we are equal.
Well,
when I did
my New Testament translation, I had never read any other translation except for the NIV once, the King James, the regular King James. I had read the NIV one time through. I read the King James, and I read the Septuagint. I perused the Fenton translation for a short time, a borrowed copy of it, and gave it back.
Okay.
But when I did my translating, I basically didn't pay attention to any of the other versions. I sat with the Greek and I studied the Greek and I did that for 4 years, 5 years before I even started translating.
Yeah. That is correct. Any Bible should have been an Oxford Bible. Yeah, that's also one of the good ones. But I have
I use the NA27 and the Liddell and Scott lexicons I just don't pay too much attention to other translations. I pay more attention to the way Greek words were used in the Septuagint, in Josephus.
When I can, and
in Strabo and Diodorus and other contemporary writers when I can.
Yeah, that's best.
And Henry, I have two Liddell and Scott lexicons. I have a Thayer's lexicon, and I use that and I quote from it sometimes in my notes. And I have the very large 9th edition of the the Liddell and Scott lexicon, and I have the abridged version based on the 7th edition.
Okay.
And Josephus wrote in Greek, not in Latin.
In Greek it was, huh? Yeah.
Yes, Josephus. He actually first wrote Wars in Aramaic, and later on he made a Greek translation.
Yep.
Yes, Henry, I have the big Liddell, and I have the smaller one.
Liddell, oh yeah. You went to the Greek side, yeah. Yeah. Thought you will be on Wixom side. Okay, that could be. Yeah, but I even have seen here in the Netherlands years ago the original translation from Josephus in Dutch, then from the mid of 1700. It was a big, huge book, and I said, "Okay, may I have it at home? For I like to take photographs of it, and I have a whole series of films filled up." There's all the information of Josephus in Dutch, but black and white is it then? It should be white and black, but it's on the negative on the film. And once in a while, I can pick it up and project it and see what did he write in 1700, or what is the translation of that time saying. It's very well done. It's really worth it.
Josephus wasn't Jewish. All we have... Well, we have two things, and one of them is very, I'm going to admit that it may not seem firm, and it's not positive evidence, but the first thing is Josephus' testimony that he was from the tribe of Levi, and that's in his
life. Yeah.
And one of his daughters did marry into the Herods, and I see a problem with that, but evidently Josephus...
Yeah.
And that's recorded by him. He admits that. However, you know, I've read Josephus, and I've read I've read parts of Pliny, and other Jewish writings from the period, and I think there's a clear difference, and you could see a man's heart through his writing, especially when he writes as much as Josephus, and I tend to trust his work.
Okay.
You're right, Henry. A lot of Jews do claim descent. You're welcome to call in, too, if you want.
A lot
of Jews did claim descent from Levi, and a lot of them today claim descent from all the tribes. But well, we know it's all a lot of bunk.
Yeah. we learned a lot on Sunday. That was very interesting. It was a very good show with Eli. I like this very much. Yeah. It's good to have things to think about, and then you said, from that view I never saw it, but it is reasonable and realistic, so
I read every word of Josephus in Whiston's translation, and I think, you know, I get the impression that he's a sincere, believable man, and everything that I've read, you know, everything that I've read in Josephus, it's most of the history can be corroborated elsewhere.
Yeah.
Not you know, there are a lot of minute details that can't be, but all the general things can certainly be.
Yeah. But it is anyway a good reference. There are so few from those days that we have to need and to have to use whatever we can.
And Josephus claimed to be descended from Levi when we know there was a tribe of Levi there. We know the tribe of Levi. We know that those people were there. The Jews today claim to be descended from Levi, and they're 2,000 years removed. There's a big difference between the two claims.
That's what I would say, That's right.
Matthew, it can't be proven. Matthew has a
father or an ancestor named Levi.
But that doesn't mean he's from the tribe of Levi. But
I
kind of suggest that Matthew is from the tribe of Levi because of his function. And in the ancient world, men always did the occupation or the vocation of their fathers. And Matthew was a tax collector, which seems to indicate to me that he was probably a Levite.
That's
an indication, but that's not solid proof.
Yeah. for most of the
years. Didn't you say, Matthew, you could trace your lineage back to Stefan, you know, Moldova, the king of...
Yeah, we are. I'm just busy with it, and that is why I want to have these old history books, and I didn't go on so far. Time is lacking. I was able to find out that our family comes from Stefan. That's the basical name, the root of all. And there are some more of these derivatives from that name. And they were the as far as the history books were telling me, that in Moldova, in the Balkan area, there were two kings about 900, and the years 900,000, and they were called the king Stefan, Stefanus, Stefan, etc. And it's most probable that we came from that, because our family name, we can trace it back to the origin of writing in Europe, where common writing was, and it was in 1400. The church books are not going so far. It's only in historical essays, etc. And then you still can find the name is there. It was to be used. So it's most likely that we are descendants of these old kings of those days, because they had to move out of the Balkan area because of the pressure of the Turks. The Turks came up and they lost the war against these Turks. So they had to go north. And north means into, first of all, in Hungary, and then up to Austria as refugees. And they were living there, made a living over the hundreds of years, and then they moved on further into Europe. And you can see it on the DNA string as well, that they came from that area. That it was impossible. And also my mother's line from the Scythians, they have also been living in the same area. And that makes it easier to understand that they are connected. And they say, but in the meantime I'm doubting about the truth of that, or the opportunity, that they say that my parents' families had a joint marriage before, hundreds and hundreds of years ago. It could be that if that is from one generation, or from two or three or four generations before, I don't know, I can't say it. So there I have an open opportunity. But I know that my mother's family has been living also in the Balkan area. That is normally, and you can see it historically, so that's no problem. That's what we could trace so far. But I like to continue in the study. Will not be easy. But I learned something which is very important to understand. And when you're reading these books from the offices, these organizations, look at these authors, and all these author names are all Jewish. And then I say, thank you very much, I'm not further interested. That's too dangerous. Don't take the risk. But on the other opportunities where you can see for the haplogroups and where these people came from, you can search it all. Except for the dates they are giving is absolute nonsense. They say that Eve was in some 60,000 years ago in the middle of Africa. This is all nonsense what they are saying. But it is all the game, the same thing, to deviate the truth and to hide the truth and to cheat everybody. I don't like that. And we can't do anything about it. We are fighting against black organizations, real darkness of the pit from the hell. We have no choice. We have to do our best as much as we can. And we have to make the best of it. And so far, I may not complain. As long as that hand of Yahweh is over your head, or at least one of his angels is doing it, then you are quite well off. And okay, we have to continue his will. And that's what we are doing. At least we are trying to do our best. And so far, so good. I may not complain. Maybe the daughters have another meaning or an experience. They may say so. Let them come in. What was that I want to say? Oh, yeah. That's something I like to know from William Fink, whether he knows about it. From the end of the 30s to the end of the 60s, there was Christina Dickey had a ministry round about New York, wherever it exactly was, and she has been writing a lot of good books.
And I never heard of her.
And it's a pity, because she wrote a book, Biblical Treasures, And that book is a combination. She wrote a lot of articles for Destiny. And the editors of Destiny combined that in 2001 in a book. And that was sold then for, I bought it in England for £16. And that is describing so magnificently what is happening right today. But when I first read the book, I said, how can that be possible? Let's reread the beginning. Where did you live and when? And then I said, this is impossible that the woman knew so much in advance of what's happening right upon today's times. That she must have had a telephone line or another, maybe an internet connection with the Lord's helping aids. Tremendous. And she also said on the page that was very interesting. First of all, I was a bit astonished and a bit angry because she was comparing the Protestants of today with the Pharisees of those days. And I said, what is that? She said, well, I can't like that. And I read the article. Then I said, yeah, and basically she is right. And the today's Protestants, and I had it in our churches in the Netherlands, they're all centering around Jewry. And they say the Jews are the tribes of Israel. Even the one in our church was saying so. My father was an opposer of it. He didn't like it at all.
Well,
he wrote in letters.
Well, let me say that trend. Matthew, hold on a second, please. Let me say that that trend began when the Jews started to more or less purchase Christian publishing with the later half of the 19th century. The later parts of the 19th century. Bullinger was in bed with all with Theodore Herzl and all kinds of Zionist Jews. I'm trying to. I could never remember the guy's name when I need it.
I know that problem.
Schofield.
Thank you. Schofield. Jew knows exactly who I want to talk about. I love her. Cyrus Schofield. He was basically funded by Samuel Untermeyer and the Jews of New York to write his Bible. You know, evangelical Christianity that came from America in the early 1900s is the best Christianity that the Jews could buy. And it's
always what wondered if Schofield himself was a Jew. I don't know if you know, evidently his previous name was Scott Ifield. And he changed it to Schofield.
Yeah, there's a lot. You know, I have some data on my website. Clifton Emmerheiser has some data on his website concerning Schofield at length.
Uh-huh.
And he's written on him. And he's, you know, other people have put the story together also. And Schofield is basically, you know, he was bought and paid for by the New York bankers. And created. And that's why his books are on the shelf today. I mean, If the books on the shelf today didn't have what the Jewish owners of those companies wanted them to have, they wouldn't be on the shelf.
That is correct. That's the absurdity of today's times. But when you're talking about people with all these things, they refuse to listen. They ignore. They literally, that was that El Shaddai.
Well, they don't want to believe it's
2 weeks
true.
Ago. And then I say, it's so stupid. I know from childhood on that these people are 100% interestable. We had to play with them. They were around about, they were sitting in the classroom. And we knew it. They were liars all the time. Even the police said it. Nice boys. You can see on their faces that they are lying. And they did. And the most horrible thing we saw them lying to their own parents. Well, you could do that in your youth. For 10 minutes at the maximum, you went through. They knew exactly what was on. They were continuing to lie. And we knew it because we had seen the accident in the thing where it was concerning about ourselves while they were lying. Later on, we understood that they learned that lying from their own parents, so they were known about it, that they were lying. And I said, okay, yeah. But for a child, it's impossible to understand that you can be able to lie that long in your own parents' face. They did it. So we knew it from early beginning on. Never trust these people. You can't do it. And what I learned of the girls, etc., in the Netherlands, of these girls, never again, never again. See, nee. That is not my people. That is typical case of low ami, and in no other way. Still, people don't want to understand. They will not see it, and I can't understand that. Maybe they have never seen a Jew, but I can't believe so. Or they have never had any connection with them or to do with them. It's so strange. Only one time, I was amazed about it. I said to myself later on when I told others, I heard all of a sudden an orchestra of Mozart, Brahms, Beethoven, all of them were playing together just beside me because I heard something I had never heard before. This must have been impossible. I was on my way with my skis standing in front of me in a long line queuing up for the lift of the Little Matterhorn for the skiing area there. And then they were muttering about the Jews beside me. I said, what? This is impossible. I didn't say a word. I just was listening in. And finally, I asked the woman beside me, I never heard a story like this before. This is impossible. She said, oh, man, don't talk about it. The man behind us is a Jew, and he is saying that the Jews have no rights to worry. They are the best ones, and they are super, and this and that, and all that sort of nonsense. And she said, we are opposing because I am from Greece, and I have to do business with a lot of business people. And with these Jews, you can never do any kind of business. It's impossible. You are always cheated, and they will never listen to you, and it must be always their profit, never anything for you. It's always on their side. I said, oh, I have never heard this before. It's like the super music. And that's hard, but it is so.
Well,
it's
right. The only people that know them well are the people.
It should not be, but it is so.
The only people that know them well are the people that have dealt with them directly, and I've had many bad experiences in my own life dealing with them.
I'll believe it.
I thought, when I had my trouble back in 1989, I thought the best thing to do was hire a Jew lawyer because, if you want to fight with the devil, you got to hire somebody that knows the devil intimately, and it didn't work out very well at all. I got screwed at every turn.
Yep.
And I got sold out at the last minute. I had a case I fought for 7 years, and I got sold out at the last minute. I was out of money, so I guess I got sold out. When I ran out of funds, it was all right. And as long as you have money, you could probably keep fighting. But
and they earn the money of you. they steal it.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
One of my friends got almost broke about that because it's his wife. And then a stupid thing in their horse stable, which they had to sell and whatsoever. He said, how many of these judges and the things I have been paying for? He said, it's incredible. They are sucking you out to hell. I said, yeah, you better stop it. I can't. I have to go on. Until it really was in the end so far that he said, I have to stop it, for there is no more money. And they suck you out. It's the same way because they like to earn on it. And they don't like to stop the business because then the earning is stopping. The more they can suck out of you, the best it is. I heard from a very well-known person. I am not allowed to mention his name, but he has been in jail for a very long time. And his children are victims of it. And he said one thing. Learn one thing in life. Never get involved in whatever way in jurisdictional things, for you're always losing. He is right. It's a horrible thing, but it is so. In the Netherlands, from the 1950s on, and maybe before the war, the jurisdiction, it was totally untrustable. Well, stay out of it, whatever happens. And probably that's in the States, the thing.
Well, absolutely. Lawyers are there to follow the procedure. That's why they're there. They don't care about the truth. They don't care about what's right and what's wrong. They only care about following the procedure.
Earning money. The more the better.
I'm about to put up a Eustace. It's not really related to the material on Chris DeGenia, but the man had an excellent insight into the way the beast works. And I'm about to post a Eustace Mullins video on the court system on Chris DeGenia.
But who is going to take, who is, what is his Who is going to judge the judges? There is only one.
All right, there's only one judge.
I'm glad.
All of the unrighteous judges, they're going to be judged by their own ruler, aren't they?
Yeah.
By their own yardstick.
Right, and I'm glad that I'm not in their shoes. That's one of the most dangerous places to be, in shoes of those kind of people. Yeah, I learned my lessons in that way and said, yeah, you better keep quiet and stay at a level. Don't take any risk. It's terrible, but it's so rotten in today's times, and we have to wait a little bit longer before Christ is coming back. But I can't believe that it will be long, because yesterday I read an article, from Eli. Of course, it came from Eli. About what they have as opportunities now, what they can do by means of the HARP project and anything else. And they have the idea that's probably going to try, maybe it's going to work, that they will create in the upper atmosphere reactions, three-dimensionally, of a kind of coming back of the angels and Christ, etc. They can project that in
Well, yeah, you know, we'd all like it to happen tomorrow, but the last time a remnant was 8 people, and a remnant can get pretty, it can get pretty small, and this could go on for another 50 years. I hate to say it, and we all like to think that, you know, it's going to happen tomorrow, and we all like to see it in our lifetime.
Kind of believe Ms. Revy, that he said so, it will probably be. And when it's going on in this rapid way of degeneration, well, then I think that they might go use this by 2012 at the end of the year to cheat us right at that time because of the end of the Mayan calendar. But that is, of course, big nonsense then. And I hope the Lord is going to intervene sooner. Yeah, that's maybe the best. For what they have in mind, if you read that article, that is dreadful, really dreadful. And a lot of people will be deceived by it, and it will be very dangerous for them. And another group of people will go and die because of the madness which can go and happen then. But the lucky thing we have is that the happening, that Christ is coming back, at the same time the dead body has to come from the soil. And this is interesting, because they can't do anything like that. But that's only the Lord who can do so. And that's what we have to wait for. Let's wait and see. Yeah. Let me see what's written there. At length. Chris, what are you saying?
Well, I was waiting for you, but I don't know if you want to... I had a further email from this chap, new contact. He asked some other questions, so I was just wondering if it might be pertinent to discuss it. Should I read it out to you? This other email says, thank you for email and the enzymes, very greatly received, gratefully received today. Please could you send me something on, inverted commas, the beasts of Genesis, etc., and how this relates to the pre-Adamic peoples, as this is another area I would be very grateful to have some light cast on. I'm really starting to think 2012 could be the year. It all kicks off for the 10 tribe nations. So I have the Hendel Cross book concerning 2012. Well, I don't know what that is. If ever you want to borrow it, you're most welcome. The Westminster Abbey sermon sounds interesting. Just another question I forgot to ask you at the weekend. How does Christian identity understand the word Gentiles in the New Testament? Are these the 10 tribes in exile and hidden, otherwise called nations, i.e. Adamic people? God bless you, Wayne. So I don't know whether Bill can recommend. I've got several articles on that subject. I believe Ewan Clifton did quite a lot of work on it. I don't know if you would recommend a particular one.
I'm sorry, Chris, but a particular one for what exactly?
Well, he's interested in the word beasts in the Bible and how it relates to the pre-Adamic peoples.
Well, Clifton had just done some work on in that area. I mean, I have an overview section on Christogenia that I talk about it, but not at great length in my in my Genesis chapter 2 overview.
All right.
Mm-hmm.
But not at, you know, it's an overview. It's a couple of paragraphs. It's not anything. Mm-hmm. I'm going to go look at Clifton's site now and see if I actually have this posted.
All right. Yeah. And also for the
if there's nothing
Gentiles.
Posted on Clifton's site right now, it's not going to be much longer, and it will be posted, because Clifton did put a lot of notes together on the use of the word beast. On the use of the words K and behemoth in scripture.
Yeah.
And perhaps it'll, you know, I'm trying to think that maybe I have something that Clifton asked me to post that's in my list of tasks to do, and I just haven't gotten around to it yet. And that's a very good possibility.
All right. But like me, I've got umpteen jobs outstanding. And also, I think I was listening to one of your recent, I think that was when Eli was away and you were discussing things with Clifton Emmerheiser. He said he was doing another study on the Gentiles. I don't know if he's done a paper on that yet.
Yeah, there is a paper that's on Clifton's site, Misapplication of the Term, the Biblical Term Gentile. And that was posted on January 18th.
I have a look for that.
Along with Merits and Shortcomings of British Israel, part number 16. That was posted on January 18th also. And I know I have other papers this month to post to Clifton's site, but I've been busy and something has to get neglected. Yeah. I'm sorry. That's the way it is. Yeah. I can't do everything.
Yeah, one thing at a time.
Yeah, because at the moment, I'm, you know, as you know, I'm up with... up in Newcastle with June, and I've got one of these plug-in things for my laptop that's supposed to connect you to the internet, but it's very tenuous, and it only goes at the speed of sort of a dial-up. So, I mean, I did actually manage to connect to Bill's site this morning, and it showed me up as coming from Ellesmere Port, but I think it took about 10 minutes to connect.
Hmm.
Well, the you know, I redid Clifton's site on emmerheiser.christogenos.org.
All right.
And that site is fully functional, and I transferred the data over to emmerheiser.christogenia.org, and something went wrong in the data transfer, and I lost the Greek fonts and Hebrew fonts. And I don't know what went wrong in the data transfer. And I have to spend a day or two figuring that out. And that's, you know, I'm going to do it one day this month, but I'm going to do it as soon as I can. That's all I can promise.
Yeah.
I don't know what happened. You know, when I did Christogenia, when I redid it in an online MySQL, you know, database type program, I'm using online databases now instead of, instead of the old-fashioned HTML, CSS type stuff. And I'm using all these online databases, and I all the sites that I host now on Christogenia are in online databases except Christogenia.com, and that's not really important, that site anyway. I don't even advertise the stuff I sell, right? Well, anyway, when I did Christogenia back in November and I moved it from the old style site to the new, I had developed it the same way and moved it over and copied it over the same way, and everything went fine. But when I did Clifton's last month, I dropped the ball on something. I don't know what it is yet, but the Greek fonts didn't transfer over. All the links work, but all the PDFs and everything else works, but the Greek fonts didn't transfer over. And and they got corrupted. It's something I did in the character set, or the way that I did the MySQL, the queries to move the data up to the server, but I dropped the ball on something. I got to figure it out. I've only been at this internet stuff for a year, so you'll have to forgive me. I can't get it all in one shot.
So it's done pretty good so far.
Yeah. That's always a lot of work. So, you know, you can do only one thing at a time.
By the way, Bill, I've finished that Waddell book. And when I get back,
is that
on the
British or I'm sorry, the Phoenician origin of the Breton, Scots, and Anglo-Saxons?
Yes, I've done that.
Okay, great.
And I'll send it down the line to you. It's even as PDF file, it's 11 megabytes.
Well, that's not very big. I have 100 megabyte PDF files floating around. In fact, the Russia number one report on the front page of Christogeny is 70 megabytes. That's a big PDF file.
That's probably why I had a job downloading it. I managed to get OCR'd up to, I think it's page 73. So I'll send that down the line to you as well.
On my site is pretty much OCR'd. It's a searchable PDF. It has some problems when you move it over to a word processor. But it looks perfect. I mean, I compared, you know, all the pages I read looked fine.
Who's that?
I don't know.
That's
a horrible noise.
June's clock striking.
Oh!
Sorry about that.
Wow, it must be tea
the clock
time.
Is striking.
It must be time for tea and crumpets or something to have that clock go off. Half of England heard that.
Actually, it struck when we were listening in to Eli's on Sunday, and Matthew and just finished talking, and June's clock struck, and Eli blamed Matthew for making a noise and muted him.
Yeah, that can happen. Yeah, it was around 8 o'clock or so.
Matthew's doorbell.
Yeah. And the funny thing is, I don't have a bell. In all the 30 years that I'm living here, I never mounted a doorbell. Yeah. Only rare people trying to find a doorbell here. But the bell, I knock at the door, I hear it. Yeah, that's no problem. And I don't hear it. Now that I'm busy, that's no problem. But the postman isn't informed about it. He knows about it. And if he can't get rid of his parcels, then he is going to bring it to the bank. And from the bank, I'm always hearing, was he in there? Yeah. So there's no problem about search. But some people, I want to sell you anything at the door. I don't like it. I'm busy. I can't sit and do nothing. Even when I'm in the bathtub, then I'm still thinking. There's always something to think about. So we can't waste time. There's so much interesting in science and research and biblical things and spiritual things. There's so much you better continue to think about such. That's better as wasting your time on nothing. Yeah, that's normal. I have another question. I'm still thinking about what was it, and I have something, and I can't figure it out. I'm lost. That happens. I'm not the youngest, but never mind. I'll find it somewhere. And this Sunday, we're going to have an interesting thing from Eli. Oh, he was going to continue about the subject. That is right, yeah. He had a second department on it. Let's see what it will be.
About what subject?
That was a very good thing. Like last Sunday, on the Jews now we lose them, Josephus, etc., and how the situation was there.
Oh,
it's
on
a
the
very
Sunday
interesting
program.
Thing
okay.
And thema. Yeah, on the Sunday program. Well, that's very interesting. And it's the right time to me. It's 6 o'clock then. Oh, that's 1.5 hour, 2 hours, whatever it is. That works fine. It's just at the right time of the day. Okay, you're missing some. If you want to watch the television, then you're missing something. But I don't care about that. That's not interesting. That story, he is having a lot of interesting things to think about. We can't always agree, but that doesn't matter. And the interesting thing is you're going to look at it, you're going to think about it. And this is important. Well, I always like to say to a lot of people who refuse to look from various viewpoints, that I say, okay, if you have a model of sodium chloride, that's kitchen salt. Just the model of these things in front of you. That is always with these little balls with the wires or the pins in between. And then you get that roster, that crystal roster, and you put it in front of the people. And then you say, what are you seeing? Right in the middle now. And then they see all these little squares about which the whole atom is, and the molecule is made of. And they say, okay, that is what you see now. And now turn about 30 degrees to either left or right side. What are you seeing then? That's a different view, because you can't see in the right square thing, then it's going to move. See, and that's what I say then, this is the way to look at any object which you're having in front of you. You have to view it from different angles, otherwise you will never be able to know exactly what the object is. And
well,
when you're going back in history, and certainly in spiritual history, then you have to look from different viewpoints. That works best. And
that's why
okay.
It's important to read scripture a few times. You know, it's important.
Sure.
I mean, I read the Bible in Greek or English. Every time I read it, I'm not going to say every time, but many times when I read it, I see something that I never saw before.
Yeah. Then you say, I have read it. Yeah, sure, you have read it. You better read it again. Yeah, that's correct. And that's why also from various other types of Bibles, as long as they are quite correct, you will see that they are viewing at the same point, but from different viewpoints, and then you get finally information. That is what it is looking like. And that makes it so very interesting. And by time, others who have been able to study it from another direction can tell you a lot more, and then you really get an information of what it is really concerning about. And that is the great thing. I try to explain it to a lot of people, and they have their eye flaps on, and they look straight ahead and do the wrong things. We got them
Matthew?
Hello?
I think we lost him. I mean, he's still in the chat, but I don't really see the chat. I think it froze up on me again.
Yes, we've lost Matthew as well.
He has a lot of background noise. And it's
so
hard to follow him because of all the background noise sometimes.
From you, 108? Or am I thrown off from the line? That could be. Can you still hear me?
Well,
you're
now,
back
we
now
can,
Matthew.
We went silent. We wondered what happened to you.
Yeah, that's strange, isn't it? Yeah, that's a danger when I have the microphone.
You know, the German people have brought us most of the world's technology. I mean, people in Germany are people of Germanic descent, you know, in America or Britain. But your technology is absolutely terrible. I'm sorry. The state of your I don't know. I'm trying to think that maybe I'm talking to somebody in Argentina and not Germany. I'm sorry.
But does that mean the modulation being wrong?
Yes, there's a lot of background noise. There's a lot of background noise.
Well, it's probably because Matthew's going through talk show like I did, you know.
Well,
but he's not as bad as I was.
Yeah, that could be. But because I can hear my signal here, and I have the microphone in my hand. Well, there's nothing disturbing here around about. And that is very strange. Is it now a bit better? I keep up the microphone in, or is it still worse?
Well, that's better right there. I think you overmodulate a little into the microphone. Yeah, you know, there's no background noise right now.
There's no background noise. Then. Yeah,
none
I have it now in my hand.
Right now you're crystal clear. For most of the program, there's been a lot of background noise, but right now you're crystal clear.
Hey, that's peculiar. Well, maybe it's picking up some silly sounds, but I have it in my hand in front of me, and it's closer by,
That means it is easily being overmodulated. But okay, if this is better,
well,
I'll continue.
It seems
this
to me that wherever you had the cord, you probably had it near. It was getting some interference.
Well, that could easily be. That is right.
I mean, it's you're just surrounded by electrical components, right? I mean, oscilloscopes and telescopes and.
They're out. They're off duty. That's for the day. I'm now off duty. I just have the computer on and no more. But it could be that it is picking up some sound from the ventilators in the computer. That could be that there is a direct link. That is easy. But it's better to have it in the hand. Okay, then I'll keep it in the hand. So what? But I mustn't set it in this way. That makes it a bit noisy. I'll try to get another microphone on it, because the clip on it is so impractical. By hand? Okay, I can do it by hand. So what? No, then I'll do it by hand. But now it's not anymore like in Argentina, huh, or so, or in far away, in Afghanistan
like,
or so, whatever.
Yeah, I thought you were calling from the plains of Mongolia with a Dixie cup and a string.
Yeah, yeah. That means I'm not back in Bavaria, Germany.
Well, he's down in the wilds of Bavaria, that's why.
Yeah, in the pump house.
Up
in the pump house.
I'm surprised to see that Germany still has forests. I mean, I really am. That might sound naive, but after all Germany's been through in 2,000 years of... heavily populated...
It's heavily populated and a lot of agriculture, but we still have a huge amount of forest around about this year. And it takes me 10 minutes to be in the forest here, in a small forest parcels. And when I'm going further to the east, I'm coming in the Pampas area, in the moor fields, and there's a lot of foresting, except for now, because now you can't... No, the snow is just in retiring. But there is even opportunity for doing skiing there, the skiing of Fonda. And not alpine ski, but the normal walking ski, call it in that way. That's what's possible in here. But the snow is now coming back on. It's raining in the last days. So it's above freezing point. I have something here in my hand. Lovely. It has been used many, many years in front of the window in the Netherlands. And it's giving two scales, side by side. The one in Celsius and the other in Fahrenheit. Beautiful. So when I'm going to stop observing in the observatory, then the temperature is then minus 15 degrees C, and that is just 6 Fahrenheit. Yeah, Fahrenheit plus. Minus 18 degrees Celsius is 0 Fahrenheit. Hey, that's what it is. Yeah. That was bought in the 50s, I think. And those days you could buy thermometers for in and outdoors with both scales on it. For it was just in the time after the war. And then we still had these double thermometers. So in my parental home, we were using always Fahrenheit for the living room. But when it was freezing, they were never using Fahrenheit. It was always Celsius. They were educated with both scales. And it makes no difference that when you have to talk about Fahrenheit below zero, then you have to watch it very carefully.
I didn't think anybody I didn't think anybody outside of the United States used Fahrenheit anymore. I mean, that's naive too, I understand, but...
Well, we still do in the UK.
In England.
We still put in some of the papers both Celsius and Fahrenheit, and people like myself translate the Celsius into Fahrenheit.
Maybe it's just my experience with Canada, and they insist on using Celsius everywhere. I've been to Canada a couple of dozen times, not in a while now, but
yeah.
And I learned how to do the conversion in my head because of being in Canada.
Yeah, that's right. But I think it's easy if you have a thermometer with those things on. It's easier. And minus 40 degrees Celsius is minus 40 degrees Fahrenheit. That was the link, which was always important to remember. I think it was minus 41 or so. That is equal.
Well,
the thermometer is
rather
accurate about it.
Yeah. Is it that cold there
minus 40 is minus 40 in both scales. No, unfortunately not. Oh, no. It's now outdoors. It's just, let me see, 6 degrees Celsius. No, less than that. So a temperature of 3 degrees Celsius makes about 32 Fahrenheit.
Oh,
see?
It's warm there. It's
that's cold enough.
It's
just above the freezing point. Just well, above freezing point off.
My computer tells me
by night it's going to drop. Yeah. Now, but here in the room now it's 22 degrees centigrade. Oh, yeah, the 72 Fahrenheit. That's not too bad. That's not too bad. But it's easier to use it in Celsius. That's, we are used on the continent to do it all in Celsius. But we came from South Africa, and that definitely was all in Fahrenheit. But my grandmother was always using Fahrenheit. In the beginning of 1900, it was all Fahrenheit here. And later on, they changed it, and from the 60s, it was illegal to use it even anymore. Even a pound, half a kilogram, was not to be used anymore. Even the merchandise was not to be sold anymore in pounds. It must be kilograms.
And did they do that
hyperbolic
in Britain?
But because
did they do that in Britain also recently? I thought they tried to outlaw the standard British weights and measurements in Britain, didn't they?
Oh, they definitely did try in Britain, but a lot of us still count in pounds and ounces. We like the imperial measure because that's God's standard. We don't have the devil's side.
Yeah.
Anything the French come up with is suspect, right? I mean, it's the French Revolution.
Well, they've tried to bring the metric system, as they call it, into Britain since Napoleon's day. And it's never taken on until they decided, well, I went to a court case once, and the woman who was defending the council for insisting on the metric system, she said, the UK no longer exists. Well, I wish to differ.
Yeah,
because
agreed.
I'm in the old brigade, they'll always be in England.
Yeah.
Well, it's looking pretty grim everywhere. I mean, that's the way it's supposed to be today, right?
Oh, yes.
Yeah. That's
but we're
the ugly thing
on the side. Because we are trusting Yahweh.
Right.
And he's always going to win.
Oh,
in
yes,
the end,
word will prevail, but it's on Yahweh's time scale.
Fortunately.
Oh, yes, exactly.
And we'd like to have it sooner, but I don't know. Like I said, the last remnant was 8 people, and this one, I don't know, think it's going to get back, you know, that quite that bad, but, I mean, it could very well be down to that.
Well, I think that's just a word to remind us, these mega churches, you know, thousands of people, some 3 and 4 services a day.
Yeah.
They're not part of the family we are in.
No, why does the path to destruction? And that's exactly the road they're on.
Yes.
Right.
The race-mixing road is a destructive road. The universal road is a destructive road, and that's right where they're going.
Yep.
Yes, that's where they are.
They're only representatives of the great whore. That's all they are. The beast and the whore.
Yeah. The beast. Yeah, by all means. Yeah. It's dreadful. But it is so. And we have to just fight forward to pass through. And it's not easy, but we'll try to do it. We do our best, and he knows about it.
Julie Ponson, every generation thinks they're the last, and that's true. Every generation does think they're the last. I think part of that's out of selfishness that you can't believe the world can go on without you, right? I mean, a lot of people, most of us probably feel that way at one time or another. And another thing is that I think every generation would hope it's the last.
Yeah. But if you see what the generation is today's times, what the youth means, and how few are only interested in whatever spiritual righteous things, it's just, it's peanuts. It's 1 or 2, or say, maybe you're 8 and no more. It's dreadful. And if that is over, the basic idea of socialism is only one generation and Christianity doesn't exist anymore. That's what they are aiming at. Well, they're quite far.
Well, it's I almost understand so far. Because Christianity is always going to exist. And when they get to the point where they believe that it doesn't exist, destruction will come swiftly upon them.
That's what I expect as well. And that can't be more longer than this generation in these next years. We all hope so. Wait and see. Well, we just go on and we do our best. Yeah.
Terry Taffy hasn't managed to get in yet. Take it.
She's in. Oh. Yeah. Does she have the microphone?
Well, she's not on the telephone. I don't know if she's tried to talk to Pro again, but I played with her for about 15 minutes last week, and I couldn't get it to work, and I had to dial in to do my forum call.
Oh.
The Monday night call.
Yeah.
Last week, Monday night call. TalkShoe Pro is, it'd be great if I could get it to work. I'd love it, but I can't get it to work.
Yeah. Well, she's listening in, and she didn't give a command, but she can come in any time. Well, okay, let's wait and see. Maybe she has a telephone call in between. That could be another disturbance. Yeah. And I also, the Dave from the UK is also there. And who's any more? No other speakers coming in. They may, why not? There are a lot of guests. It's good.
Oh, Dorcas is Betty. Betty, it's great to see you. I'm glad that you made it here. I saw Dorcas, but I didn't know it was you. Hitler invaded Russia because he had to, because Russia was about to invade Europe. About to invade Europe. He was on the cusp of invading Europe, and Stalin would not have stopped at Poland. He would not have stopped at Germany. He would not have stopped at France. He would not have stopped at England. We would have had, if Stalin had invaded Europe as he planned to, we would have had an ISSR. We'd have had an Irish Soviet Socialist Republic. That there is no doubt. We'd have had a Portuguese Soviet Socialist Republic and everything in between. And Adolf Hitler saved Western Europe from Soviet Russia. And Western Europe repaid him by destroying Christian Germany.
Yeah, that's right. But later on, we had a lot of dangerous times where the Russians were in Hungary, and that was pretty close to an invasion in Europe and going even further.
Henry says there's zero evidence that Stalin was about to invade Europe, and I have an article on it that I'll try to dig out and get into a PDF file on it on the internet.
Oh yeah, that's a good thing, because we have had them many of these times that it was extremely critical, and even shortly after the war, a lot of people were really afraid that the Russians were going to involve in Europe. It wasn't too far away. It was a critical time in the 50s, in the beginning of the 50s. That's what I can remember. We came just as the refugees from South Africa into Europe. We had the experience, and a lot of people were deadly afraid of getting rid of the Germans and getting the Russians in. They didn't like the idea, and they were correct. But fortunately, that was never so far. And then we got the Cold War, and that continued. But we all managed to come through, fortunately. Because when you're living on the continent in Europe, you're pretty close to Russia. When you're in England, then it's always in the sea. That's a lot better. It's a bit safer in the water. But in Europe itself, and we had to be very careful. And we didn't like those days. But we survived, and next time we will survive, I hope, as well. Yeah, what is Victor wrote? Icebreaker. The Soviet invasion.
Well, right.
One of these things. That's what it is.
And Hitler had a very high degree of success against the Soviet army when he did invade Russia, because they were only prepared for a fight in Western Europe They had no maps of their own country, and Hitler went right around them. The German forces went right around them.
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah, when, they were standing in front of the doors of Moscow. So they were very deep in. That's correct. There you are. Oh, what's she saying? I know this Lord Curzon of Russia War. Yeah, TOTV. Hey, that means she could have taken the microphone. Okay. God damn it. Yeah. See?
I think probably the microphone is not working.
Yeah, that's a pity. Yeah, the next round. But indeed, yeah, they are. It's what we know as well. Not working at the microphone. Okay, there we are. Now we know the solution. Reliable source. Okay, you would read the Russian military analysis of Sofuyarov. Yeah. Yeah, okay. But there are so many of these peculiarities with the Russian opportunities to go into Europe, but fortunately so far it was all damped. And let them stay home. We have enough sorrows and problems enough. And I know the stories from my family who were living still in Eastern Germany and the Leipzig area, and I learned a lot of them how these 40 years war for them. That was no fun at all. No fun at all. That you couldn't even speak when you were saying something. There was always an ear listening somewhere, and whatever you said was to be written on a piece of paper and went in the Stasi, etc. Oh, man, horrible if you hear these things. And where they were watching you, what you were doing, and so on and so on. I learned
sounds
a lot. I still
like
have a lot of respect for these people that they managed to come through. Yeah, that's correct. Yeah. Yeah, in today's time, it's a house full of madness, wherever you are. Where did I read that? Oh, yesterday. Oh, yeah, that's German. I got some letters from an acquaintance of mine here, and they came from people who were working in Western, people who were working in the southern area of the eastern side, the Palestinian area there in Jerusalem area, and how these Palestinians are cheated and treated there. It's beyond belief what is happening there. And they have written a live report in German, so I could distribute it here in Germany and in the Netherlands. For those who are capable also of reading German, I can send it to them. But they're really interesting articles and extremely questionable. And I wrote also on it, is that a kind of large population who are doing these kind of things to their neighbors? It's typically likely they can't be a large population. This is impossible. If you're cheating and dealing so with the people there, it's beyond beyond any description. It's terrible. But I don't have I don't have an English translation for it. But maybe someone is going to translate it into English. I don't know.
Well,
I don't have
the
time for it.
Why don't you translate it into English?
But it's interesting.
Good.
Yeah, but the difficulty is, when you're speaking a language and the other language, that's easier. But when you're having to translate somebody else's words, like an interpreter, this is another story. I did it I tried it, and Chris knows about it, how difficult that is when somebody is talking German there and he's using words I never use. This is difficult. And certainly in the spiritual things, which I had to do in the meetings in the Black Forest, then it's very difficult to learn, because I learn all what I'm learning in spiritual things is in English, never in German or hardly, and even not in Dutch. I know it's in Dutch, it's not too difficult to understand, but it's easier to read it in English, because the spiritual things and the useful information from the spirit comes from the birthright section, and that is from Ephraim and Manasseh. Then you better go to them. They have a lot of information, and that's easier. But what we discussed last meeting in Black Forest, that what we were amazed about is these Germans are extremely well informed about the scripture, and they are going really to the root of the words and they do their best to have it from the bottom, to know exactly what the words are meaning. Now, this is a very good thing. We didn't expect it. But after all, we have to say they are doing a very great job. They have to continue in it and wait and see what's going on. Chris knows it, but he can tell more about it. What is that, Chris? You better say it as well.
Oh, yes, and I've got that couple of articles. one from Manfred Hess. And one from the other chap who spoke about the Sabbath, you know, about the solar, you know, the solar day rather than the Jewish lunar day.
What was his name?
Oh, I've got
his name.
Yeah,
have to look it up.
So I'll try and translate that sometime, then I'll send it to Matthew, who can check my translation. Matthew, I don't know if he sent you a copy. Manfred Hess sent me an article on the history of the Germany, and saying how the Roman soldiers, many of the Jews, whether they were Judahites, I don't know, were actually given, because they worked for the Roman army in the Middle East, they were given side of land, areas of land in Germany, and there was a book written about it, I think in English, and he was wondering if it's still obtainable. I had meant to ask Bill, but I have to try and look it up.
Okay.
He had quite a lot of interesting information. And he was also mentioning in his lecture in Bad Teaneck that how the word Deutsch, you know, is fairly phonically similar to Jute. You know, it gradually became Jute, Deut, and then Deutsch.
Yeah, correct.
So that was quite interesting. And of course,
the word Jute, I mean, the Romans had a word, I don't want to pronounce it, Henry's going to yell at me. Utai, it's I-U-T-A-E is the way they spelled it. And that, I believe, is the root for the word jute. I don't know if that has any relationship to the word toot, T-E-U-T, for, you know, which we get Teuton and Deutsch from.
I remember.
Yeah, but Manfred Hess, because I didn't have the recording, and I mean, I don't speak German, that only know a few words.
But
he was explaining, you know, in the old languages, how it had changed. As you know, Matthew, in Germany, you know, because of the different tribes, you know, there were several different sort of versions of German, you know.
Yeah, correct. That is correct.
Because, you know, we had Jutland, you know, where the lot of German people came across, you know, to England from Jutland. You know, it's supposed to be Jutland, the Jews' land. Obviously, probably a lot of them must have stayed. And went back.
Jutish, the people, Yeah, here it is written. Henry Steger is saying the right thing. Deutsch has its origin in the old High German word, Jutish. Yeah, Jutish, meaning the language of the people, as opposed to Latin. That's correct.
Yeah.
Something like that is indeed what Hermann has said. On the internet. Now, you can read it, Deutsch. Yeah, the Deutsch meaning the language of the people.
Oh, no, I mean Manfred Hess.
That is.
It's your duty to log in again.
Yeah, but Manfred Hess.
Yes, I have to try.
Huh?
So we go. I think I'm going to have to log out because our hour's up, you know, and log in again.
Okay.
Okay. See you later.
Yeah.
That was in from Manfred Hess. Is one of the Manfred Hess by itself. He was a years and years. He was a teacher. And opsa, that was the microphone, the telephone. It's a very interesting man. He has a lot of information and a lot of experiences, etc. Living in the area from Stuttgart. It's not too far away for him to the Black Forest. It's almost next to the door. And he has a farm there because he was more or less brought in problems. So he stopped his job as a teacher. But he continued for himself to teach himself what is to be found around in and around the Bible. And as such, he has been searching for what the Jews mean. And he also went back to the origin in the days of Christ, where these various groups came from. And that's what he was explaining on the table, and that it's the Urch name also came in. For him, it would have been very interesting to follow the last Sunday story of Eli. I wanted to call him. I did forget it. I don't have time anymore. Maybe I'll see. Yeah, I will have to be in a hurry because tomorrow it's Friday again. I can write him an email and to tell him how to come in on to the show because he is capable of understanding English. I think he even gave... it could be that he also has been teaching English, but I'm not sure. But he is capable of understanding it, and listening in is no problem. But going to speak is a bit more complicated for him. But he's capable of doing it. So I'll try to get him interested that he is going to listen in. And if he has time for it, on Sunday, 6 o'clock in the evening for him, would be interesting to have an extra guest from Germany. Maybe some others are coming in, if we can get them interested. But always is this hatred language barrier, and it's a shame. A lot of them can listen in easily enough, would be fine for them and useful, and when they would take the microphone, it would be even top best. But a few only can do so. It's a pity. And maybe the man from Denmark is listening in, but Chris can know so. He's maybe capable of saying some about that. The man from Denmark is capable of understanding English. That's no problem. He's even capable of speaking it. He might be listening in at the moment. I don't know. I have no idea whatsoever. But I thought that Chris said so that he was going to listen in. Okay. Chris, are you back again?
We were contacting Mikel yesterday, and he said he would hopefully join in.
Are you for listening in?
He would certainly be able to speak in English, because he's excellent.
Okay. Yeah, okay. That's best. Okay. Well, maybe he's listening, and that's what we have to thought to, yeah. Oh, what? The Middle East English Jews? Yeah, the tribe Jews from the medieval Utah? Yeah, correct. And the old Yotas? Utah? Yeah. Correct, not related to Dutch, to German. Yeah, that's correct. So that comes from Denmark, from up in Denmark. And that would typically be a subject for...
It's clear to me the Jutes were a Germanic tribe that settled in Denmark. That, you know, they
sure.
In Denmark,
they sure.
Crossed into York in great numbers also.
Yeah. And that's what I always be careful. That's a very silly thing, certainly for British people, and from continental certainly. Be careful with the Belgian people. Never say it to the Belgian. It's very dangerous. But years of, say in the, now maybe 1,000 years or 1,500 years ago, apart from the Belgian population, left the continent and went to England. And they created the people of the year from Kent. So the forefathers of the Kent people, they came from Belgium. Never tell that to Belgium, because the Belgian people are the most stupid ones in Europe. What did I say? That's what they say, so. Yeah. And what we always say is, be careful if you say so, then they are so proud about it that they put off their own shoes because they can't stand anymore in their own shoes. But if they do so, oh boy, the smell. That's what they like to see. Some people don't like the Belgian, but never mind. They are not too bad. Chris can tell about it because he has been many times in, what is it, in Blaha. Oh yeah,
Bruges,
just over
Bruges.
The border in the Flemish area. Huh?
Yes.
You said so?
Yes. That's right, yes.
So,
well,
you know that
they... They seemed okay to me. I mean, in fact, I was mentioning, we both know someone in Holland called Danica, and I went to this place, which was one of the houses of the Belgian royalty, and there's a lady who runs it. And she was speaking, and I could have sworn it was Annika, and she looked, you know, she's about the same height as Annika, so I think she could have been a distant relative.
Yeah, that could be. Yeah, that could indeed be. But indeed, if you want to eat something, you can eat very well in Belgium. I've been there a few times, eating is really very well. Oh, yes. Oh, yeah. Pralina, yeah, oh yeah, that's very well.
Probably
yeah,
Bill doesn't know anything about that.
But from the Netherlands to the Belgians, there are millions of jokes who are going to and fro over the country. Like the Bavarians have with the Austrians. Oh yeah, they always these dirty jokes about the Austrians. But that's what you have in the United States as well. That's anywhere in the world. I think the neighbors are always the lower ones. But never mind. But it's indeed historically known that the basical part from Belgium went to Kent. That can happen. And the peculiar thing is, to me personally, is that apart from the northern Lower Saxony people from the coastal area of north here, that is the Frisians, indeed the Frisians, they went from Friesland there, that are at the top area, Lower Saxony, over the North Sea, and came into the south, and say about just east of Southampton. That's where the maps are saying that these people went in and were living there and populated that area of Britain. This is very interesting, because the silly thing is that my great-great-grandfather, who came from... Yeah?
I don't know if you actually... There was an interesting program... When they had some decent programs on TV about the origin of the British language. And they did some sound recordings. They spoke, you know, in East London, we have what we call the Cockney accent.
Sure.
You know, broad Cockney. And the people there could, it was almost the same as what they were speaking in part of Friesland. You know, they could almost understand each other.
Yeah, that is correct. It could be. That's easy enough. Yeah, that is sure.
Yeah.
Chetta also warned me for that. That and certainly because these Frisians and the Scotch, they have a lot to do together. And that is also certainly the same thing for those who went to the south and influenced and were living in the south there. That's correct. But the peculiar thing is that my forefather was the same name as I had. Was born there in, in Lower Saxony, and he came from there, and his king at that time was Georg. And that Georg went to England during his reign, and when my forefather was living there, and went to England and became George the First. And the silly idea is that my forefather was then also a Matthew, and six kings later, King George the Sixth was there in England, when I was born, just at that place, on the coastline, where these former population from the northern Lower Saxony part came in, I was born there, at George the Sixth. Crazy. And again, with the same name as Matthew. That's a strange thing. I have more of these peculiar things. They must have had some certain reason, but I don't know what. But it is so peculiar that you will go and find, search out in history, and then you're saying that it's peculiar. Why? Well, I don't know. I'll just notice it, and I say, strange. And it's strange parallels. It's not like that film from the Zebulonites, which I saw for the first time in America. Twice I saw it in America from Zebulon. That's a strange parallel. And indeed, when you're going to look at that film, Strange Parallel, and I know a bit about the Netherlands, then you can see indeed what they have been able to find out is really correct, that Zebulon is indeed in the Netherlands. And there is now a beautiful article which I read from, oh, Chetter sent it to me, and that is telling about these Frisians and these Frisian populations, and that indeed it is so that these Frisians, their origin is from the, Issachar. Issachar, that is the one who's the forefather or the tribesman of these people from the Friesland area.
Well,
and
I don't see how anybody could make
there
that.
There are a lot of peculiarities. Yeah, that is possible because of the habits of these people, the way in which they are operating there, is exactly confirming the blessings which Jacob gave the children. That's really happening right in front of our eyes in the Netherlands. But you have to know these people. You have to go there, and then you can understand. It. From outside on, it's not so easy to see it, because about Issachar and Zebulun, who are linked together always, if you have the one, then you have the other in the area. And from outside, it's hardly understandable, or impossible almost, to believe it, but there are some people who have been studying the subject and wrote an interesting article about it, and if you know about the history from the Netherlands and the northern part of Germany, the same area, then you can find out, indeed, that it's quite likely that it is so. That it's reasonable. And the interesting thing is, and that's why because I know that Chetter is one of them from Friesland, and I like to boost them a bit up, and I also have Friesian blood in my family from the mother's line, and then I say, come on, Zebulun and Issachar have the end stage time, the duty to raise up and to make a lot of fuss, and to start up the real Christian way of life, to show up the world, hey, we are going wrong, we are the least of all of the tribes, and now we are going to push forward, we have to bring the word of the Lord forward, we need to march on, and now we are going to give you an example. And this is what Ria, another woman in the Netherlands, is also saying, and then I say, they are correct, but they better do it right now. The sooner the better, they have to start. And so we have to push them a bit. Maybe it works. You never know. And Chris is also knowing these people, so it's interesting that these things are coming to broad daylight in today's time. Wait and see what's the truth. We'll have to wait.
Well, you know, on a personal level, on the personal level, I don't really, I never despise the Dutch, but I mean, that they were, most of those Dutch tribes had given in to the Romans and taken Roman allegiance in the first century, second century. And most of those, the Dutch people also, took the English side against the Germans. And as far as I'm concerned, the English side of World War II is the Jewish side. And they took the side against the Germans. And I don't know. The Dutch seem to me to be awfully quick to sell out their heritage. That's all I'll say. I mean, that might be arguable. It might be conjectural. But that seems to be the truth to me.
But you have to remember, Bill, that, you know, after the Spanish Inquisition, when they sort of kicked the Jews out of Spain, a lot of them...
They all went to Holland, I know. Yeah.
Amsterdam.
I know.
And they decided that, you know, with the East India Company, etc., then they saw there were better pickings in England, so they all moved to London. Most of them moved to London. So there's been a heavy influence, Jewish influence in
there's no doubt.
Holland. And I mean, of course, there's been a heavy influence of Jews in Germany because they were...
Anywhere.
Yeah.
Anywhere.
Well, right. That's what I'm trying to address is that I don't, you know, it's hard for me to fathom the Dutch ever making a stand for their race. You know, for the wider race. I don't think they've done it yet.
But another thing, Bill, when you say that England was for the Jews, we as ordinary people in England, we had no idea.
Well, I understand that.
That we were
taken
to war.
I understand that.
Just the Jews.
And that's the same thing in America today with all these wars in the Middle East. And
yeah.
You know, it's a never end. And it was the same thing in America during World War One and World War Two. That they, you know, but the English side of the Anglo-American, if you want me to fill it out, side of the both of those wars is the Jewish side.
Not with the permission of the people. We were taken in quite unawares that our leaders were on the wrong side, but we had learned.
I understand that, but you know, Satan's war is a war of deception as much as it is a war of bombs.
Yeah. And Canaanite influences everywhere. That's correct.
And what I'm saying is that World War II, the Dutch teamed right up with they despised the Germans.
Yeah, well, they were invaded, and they were pressed under. They had nothing to say. The weapons were pointed at them. If you have a weapon being pointed at you, I wonder what you're going to say.
I don't care about the weapon. I'm never going to sell out my principle. I'd rather be dead and keep to my principles than be alive and be a whore.
These people were never informed about whatsoever. All of a sudden, your neighbor is coming in and taking over the government with military power. Then you're going to oppose him. But before that time, say for my grandparents, in the end of 1800, there was nothing whatsoever as a controversy against Germany. On the contrary, when you were studying something and studying books in what kind of subject it was, it was always in German. That was normal. And my family, they went to Germany to study technology, etc., in the Rhineland area, etc. So that was all after the wars. After these Jew wars, that is where the treatment came in, and the people didn't know, and the government never told the truth, and they still don't tell you the truth. That is why these people had an objection against the Germans, but it was all man-made after the First World War. The First World War was not even a problem, because my grandfather, who was a surgeon, he went into as a private doctor, as a surgeon, for the Red Cross into Germany over Berlin by train into today's Czechoslovakia, which was Austria. And he was there in a hospital operating, and he had 13 different nationalities, which he had to cure and operate upon in all the months he was there. It was an incredible thing. But he was not against the Germans. He was in the First World War. He did his duty, as a surgeon, as he did. But he learned something. He learned something terrible, and that was correct. What he was telling his children, and via his children, we got it to hear, is that he said, two people in the world, you can't trust whatsoever at all, Jews and Catholics. And in the Catholics way, he was meaning, in actual fact, the Jesuits. The Jesuits and the Jews, you can't trust. And he was correct. He knew exactly. He didn't know why, but he knew they are not trustable. But he was on the hand. In reality, it was not, and nobody in the First World War was really against the Germans. Certainly in the Netherlands, because they were free. And it was on the other hand, even the Queen, she gave the opportunity for the German Kaiser to live in the Netherlands. And he has been living there in the middle, in Doorn, in the Netherlands, in exile. But he was free in his area there, and nobody was going to shout at him or look at him or whatsoever. No, because nobody was interested in it, because the Netherlands were free. And that was the basic thing for the Second World as well. Everybody was hoping that nothing was to be done with the Germans until the time that they came in with the tanks and rolled into the Netherlands and the airplanes came in. Then the tide changed. But it was all insisted by the Jews. They did it. I can tell a lot about it. But imagine about this. This is crazy. You can't believe it. An acquaintance of mine, who later married one of my girlfriends, which I knew about, and that was okay. No worry about it. This was an acquaintance. And he divorced from a woman. And during one of the evenings in the winter, he was reading a book, a series of books, is that by Dr. Lou de Jong in the Netherlands, and concerning the whole history of the Second World War. It was very interesting books. And then he stumbled over something in a question where he never thought about, that it is plainly written in that book. And the book is saying that who were giving the name lists of the Jews to the German officers? No German officer knows in downtown Amsterdam who is really who. They don't know. They have no idea what it is. So where did these lists in the German hands came from? Somebody must have given them. And then he was reading further, and he said, the name of that one, the one who did it, that was the praises, the praises of the Jewish consul in downtown Amsterdam. And he read the name of the man, which I don't know by heart, he read the name, did it beg your pardon? That is your father, he said to his wife. 14 days after, he was divorced. She simply said, you are a goy, and you are not allowed, as a goy, to bring a Jew onto broad daylight. I'm divorced of you. Now, that's a fine story. He said, I know about this. I know such things. This is typical what they do. I said, this is happening in the Netherlands. This treatment in the Netherlands. And how was it in other countries in roundabout in Europe? The Mendelssohn Bank in Amsterdam. You don't need to ask what Mendelssohn's name is then from which population that comes. They paid Hitler and a lot of money. This is unbelievable, but it is so. It's known. And at the Deutsche Bank, you don't need to think about it. They were under Zionist control and they paid Hitler. This is all known.
Well,
nobody wants to hear
it.
Maybe we are not even allowed to say so.
It's clear that Hitler tried to make an agreement with the Zionists in order to move the Jews out of Germany and into Madagascar at first.
Yeah. But additional to that, a lot of Jews in Germany they wanted to get rid of. They were paid. They were at a fine agreement to pay them to leave the country, and they did with their money. They went off. And they never saw any kind of encampment whatsoever. The last ones who didn't notice it and who stayed, they went into the camps, etc. But it's an absurdity. But it all has happened. But it is not, you can't even talk about it in Germany here. It's like dangerous. These are crazy things. This is the truth. This happened. Nobody wants to see it. You can read it. It's all written on paper. In today's times, it's easier to get it in. But even that man here in an Englishman in Germany here, living in years and years in Germany, and he was asking a very simple question. How on earth, how can you know exactly when so many people are destroyed, say it in that way? How do you know exactly the amount of them? One more or one less? Nobody can know so. And he wrote a paper, and he sent it to the government, and he sent it to the Jewish Council. And they simply asked, how do you know that there were exactly 6 million Jews being eliminated, not one more or not one less?
Well, it's a religious
man, he was sent in jail for such a thing. Yeah, sure. Absolutely. But he was not allowed to, he was heating up the population. Finally, by the judges, he got this right, that it was nonsense. What he was asking was a reasonable question. There was nothing wrong with that. How could they know that it was exact 6 million? Nobody can say so. It's impossible. But he was to be seen as an idiot and whatever.
Six is the favorite number.
And
you got a six-pointed star.
Right. Yeah. And the interesting thing also is there are 6 zeros in 1 million. So you have 6 with 6 zeros behind. Well, that's a fine number for them. It's absurd. But I always say somebody who is a zero is a naught, is nothing. So if you have 6 zeros of nothing, then there's nothing left over. But that's today's time. And It's so difficult in today, and you can't talk about it here in Germany. Whatever you can try, it's always pushed in behind the screens. Don't talk about it. It's too dangerous. But these people still don't know. And the absurd thing is that I was with my family in Leipzig, and I should go back home to the south on the Monday morning. And we just were fiddling around in the maps, locally around, and I said, oh, wait a minute, Kolwitz is there. Well, it's just about 20 miles in distance. I said, that is interesting. I'm going straight into Kolwitz. I like to see what's to be seen there now, and then after that I'll go to the south. And I made the trip there. I came in, and I immediately saw the castle when I came in. But I saw, hey, from the films I know about, there is a difference. Something doesn't cooperate with the film. But okay, I can go further, and I went into the castle.
Is,
saw it all.
It was made in London. Castle.
Right, it was made in London, in England. The whole thing was on
It was Stirling Castle they used as the... backdrop
hold it. Right. That's really, except for when they were looking at the castle from the front side. Then they have taken photographs of the castle and they projected it in the film. And you can't see that. There was a very fine way of doing it, but it was perfectly. And I have been looking around in it and I was just at the right time where I saw it in the old condition. Because when I was in the chapel there, then the benches were still there, and Rumble, who were just left after the war, were still in, but it was never used again. And now it's all repaired now and changed, etc. So it was a marvelous trip in there to see where these chaps have been walking around, where they escaped about, etc. I saw the tower in which they went up, and where all the rubbish was piled up on the top floors, etc. It was great. And the hole in the wall, which they have been burning in almost with water vapor and steam, and by that means of the pressure, then it was breaking open. And so step by step, they went into the wall until they got through. It was marvelous, if you see that. And being in that castle, you can't imagine it. You must have seen it yourself. And standing in at the same place, fantastic. So I was in there. And... the clock is going again.
It's tea time
all
again
the
already. It's tea and crevice time again already.
Yeah.
Matthew, there's a question a question on the screen about a German, about the meaning of
some what
German.
What does this mean in German? The Antwort in the Jewish for the elimination of the Jewish people. That's what it means. Huh? The Antwort is the elimination of the Judean people, focus, the people. That's
yeah,
what
well,
is.
That's, a, you know, just because
yeah,
the
nobody,
words exist doesn't mean that there's a plan.
But it is. That was formally said this. Today, you will never hear it in a game. Yeah, maybe some people, but huh? Why did Himmler say this is Poland? See, that's what it is. Yeah, that was their idea, to eliminate them. To eliminate them forever. They got sick of them. And now, what is now the truth? Where is it? In the middle somewhere? Because you get so many stories and so much information. Fortunately, most of it's what you can get from England, etc.
Well, right. If I stood here and said
this,
we have to get rid of all the Haitians, that don't mean that we have to. That I want to kill them all. That's ridiculous.
Yeah, it doesn't work.
If I say we got to get rid of all the Canadians, that don't mean that we want to kill them all. That's ridiculous. Don't.
And it
doesn't prove
work.
Anything. That proves nothing.
You will find Canadians all over the world. So if you eliminate them, it's impossible. You have to go all over the world. And seriously seen, in all history, nobody has been able to rot out the whole population everywhere. That was impossible.
Well, right,
there are
always
people somewhere.
I would never dispute that the Germans didn't want to eliminate the Jews from Germany. But that doesn't mean killing them. And there's absolutely not one bit of documentary evidence for any mass extermination of Jews. It's ridiculous. And any time that it's against the law to hold scholarly discourse and disputation of a topic that raises an awful lot of red flags. I mean, the truth does not need laws to support it.
Well, you don't talk about it here anymore. It, when you're going to try, they send you to jail.
That leads to believe that the whole story's fake, just because they have laws against talking about it.
Yeah, and the opposite thing is what we have been able to learn and understand is very interesting what happened in Poland. With all these military people from Poland, they were murdered. Huge graves were found that they were murdered. And the Russians are saying that the Germans did it, and the Germans are saying the Russians did it. So who did it? And now we found out it was indeed the Jews from Poland who were dressed in the enemy's uniform. To me, then they are snouchers, and for a snoucher, there was no way out. Send them to the side and kill them. For snouchers, somebody walking in another one. See, the Soviets did it, did cut time. They say that it did cut time, but it is now proven that Soviets maybe did it as well, but the basis was that the Jews did it. They were dressed in a wrong uniform, and they killed them by a shot in the neck. And it's a horrible situation, and it's a horrible story. If you read it, then you can't it's difficult to believe even that they did it. And now, there's still again such a problem. Who did it now? Did the Jews it? Did the Russians it? I think it was a combination of all three. And the basis was that the Jews started it. Dreadful to think about it. Dreadful. But, you can say whatever you about think of and say about it. It's a very, very sad story. And we have to give it in Yahweh's hands. He knows it all about. And the bad ones, he will separate. And the good ones who were eliminated there, he will also separate on the right side. Wait and see. But it is a very, very difficult thing to talk about. And that's for everybody. I do hear a lot of it. But the thing is, and that's what I was saying about for Colditz. When I came out of Colditz in the evening, I was here in the south. Then I said to the people here in the shopping center, "Yeah, a strange idea. 6 hours ago, I was still standing in Colditz," and they were looking at me from, "What is he talking about?" I said, "Colditz." "Colditz? What is it? Can you eat that?" "See, don't you know about Colditz?" "No, I have no idea." "Is that it? The most well-known prison camp where the officers were placed in." "Never heard about. Even chaps in the company told them the next day." "No idea what you're talking about. Never heard about." "I think, Ben, you can go to France, to Belgium, to the Netherlands, to Denmark, to Poland. You can ask them. They were all in. Everybody knows it. They have all seen the film from England about the Colditz story." "Never heard about it." And that is a sad story. They don't know anything. And tourists from Germany who are coming in Colditz, in the place Colditz is there because they happen to be there, they see a castle, could be able to see the castle. They go up to the castle, and then they're coming in, and they can see, okay, you can come in, and they are reading texts in English, which they don't understand why, and then they're coming into the castle in the hallway, and then you can buy booklets, but it's all in English. They don't understand it. And then later on, after I was for the second time there, then they said, "Yeah, we have changed it now. We have now translations from English bookworks into German for what happened here." I said, "No, it's unbelievable." I said, "Yeah, sure. We had to do it because the Germans did absolutely not know what has happened here." I said, "Yeah, it's peculiar." I said, "I'm coming from the Netherlands, and of course I know about it, but German people are kept away from all information at any time, during the war, after the war, at any time." And, yeah, who is going to be blamed for that? Is that the state? Is that the church? Or the Zionists? Or all three of them? I think all three of them.
Well,
and that's a pity, because
these
people have no idea of their own.
For the same reason that the Russia number one report was suppressed. And it's absolutely clear that the Bolshevik crimes in Russia, and they're all the crimes of the Jews that destroyed Christian Russia, and they blame, you know, all those same crimes are blamed on Germans, yet, you know, the Germans are blamed for perpetrating those crimes on the Jews. And nobody pays any attention to what happened to the Christian Russians.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's known.
Under the reign.
Yeah, yeah.
And that was the greatest war crime ever, by far. That was a much greater war crime than anything the Germans possibly could have done, even if they did do everything the Jews said they did.
Yeah, but even
and we have a total information blackout on it to this day.
Yeah, yeah, we are not allowed to know it because of these the Russians who fled to Germany or were together with the Germany after Ukraine, etc. And they were sent back home, and they knew what was going to happen. When they were home, they were shot, all of them. So out of the train, up a machine gun went over them, and they knew in advance that. Eisenhower insisted upon it that these people were sent back home, and they were shot. Train loads after train load. It's a terrible thing.
And
that's all.
Henry's saying there's no information blackout on both of the crimes. But you know, I see the Germans accused in the mainstream media all the time, and I don't even pay any attention to the mainstream media.
You better don't.
I never hear anything about the Jews in Bolshevik Russia at all.
Never.
Evil Germans. I never hear anything about Trotsky and Lenin the Jewish
and the murdering parties
the Bolshevik Revolution or anything like that.
Yeah. And how many German soldiers are to be eliminated in Russia?
And Henry, you're mentioning a book that's
cool.
Basically it's obscure compared to why don't we have October 1917 museums commemorating all the dead poor Russian people, all the poor dead Russians? Well, we have Holocaust museums all over America. Why don't we have Holocaust museums all over America?
Yeah, we don't have them here.
If we
want to
commemorate Holocaust, we should commemorate all of them. And the Bolshevik Holocaust of Christian Russians was far greater than anything the Germans could have done if indeed they did it. And the whole gas chamber thing is all just a bunch of it's all just a load of horse garbage.
The German Holocaust being covered up, you know, the carpet bombing of defenses, Dresden and Hamburg, when, you know, literally thousands of Germans were killed, and also the treatment of the German prisoners by Eisenhower in the camps. Many died for lack of nourishment and protection from the elements.
Well, I think the biggest lie of all is what we're constantly being reminded of, the Russian Revolution. And I tell everybody that mentions that to me, I say, but it wasn't the Russian people who were revolting.
Not at all.
The Bolshevik Revolution.
Yeah.
And it's never reported as such.
No.
That's correct.
It wasn't even a revolution. It was a takeover. It was a takeover that was orchestrated
by
Wall Street.
But this is how they use words. They use them wrongly. And because the media is backing them up, the majority of people don't think very much for themselves. Consequently, they take them at their word. And we are just thankful that Yahweh has opened our eyes. And we know exactly who the enemy is, although he's not usually acknowledged by lots of so-called preachers and teachers. But some of us are not unaware.
We get interesting. Henry is having problems. Someone freaking answered the question: how many revolutions were there in 1917? That's the First World War. How many revolutions would you tell? The world was in war, except the Netherlands and Sweden, that were not in war. So the rest of how many countries are there in the world? So that's what it is. How many in the USA?
Well, in 1917, there was the war in the Middle East, which was a very important factor. You know, when Allenby took on behalf of the Zionists, took over Jerusalem from the Turks.
Out of the hand of the Turks.
I think Henry is pretty angry at the moment.
we are deaf. Yeah, but how many revolutions? I have never been able to count them. I wasn't born in that time. It's a simple question. How many revolutions in 17? Well, if it was in Russia, there was a Russia and a revolution. And if it was one, it was enough. But is that not enough? How many do you want, Henry? Doesn't he have a microphone? He can come in the store.
No, he said he had a microphone. He said
it would be easier for... Now there were two, finally. He is saying there were two. Okay, let him explain it. I'd like to hear it. This is very important, he's saying, okay? But two who? Now, he has to write it. It's a pity for Chris that he can't see it. First one, March 1917. First one in March 1917, okay? People's Revolution. All parties took part.
Is that also it was a Jewish revolution,
Dillinger?
Not a people's revolution.
Yeah. Bolshevik, just one party among many.
Yeah, right. And all the other socialist parties were primarily Jewish also. And the Bolsheviks, in all fairness, the Bolsheviks destroyed a lot of them also. But that was basically one crime ring against another anyway.
Right. I think it's... The best is for Henry to read the book of Mrs. Dillinger. Mrs. Dillinger from the United States, and it's obtainable in the States by Christian Identity in Helimore in Arkansas. And Miss Dillinger is exactly explaining what happened in those days because she was there. She was there, she has seen it there, and she has explained also with the information which you could get from all kind of offices and whatever. And there's a big book about it explains exactly what has happened there and how the situation was. It's for the Americans extremely interesting to read that book.
It's
obtainable there. You have it.
I have a PDF copy of it. I'm going to put online soon.
Well, that's a good thing. Let Henry read it. It's very important.
Well, Henry already seems to be a pretty well-read guy. He just, I'm not sure I agree with all of his sources. Yeah, I don't read Zionist propaganda.
You can't get the right answer if you don't know the right question. I've read Dillinger. Okay. I've also read Crane Titus. Okay, good. I've read all this stuff. Okay, good.
Yeah, I've read Ivy Pernitus too, the Talmud on
that. Yeah. This is not Zionist propaganda. This is not Zionist propaganda. No, indeed. So? It's interesting tonight.
To me, 90% of what comes out of 90% of what comes out of the mainstream publishing houses is Zionist propaganda. It might be masked, but it's enemy approved or approved by the Zionist Jews or however determined.
Just a minute. This is interesting. There were not Zionist parties involved in the Russian revolutions. Oh, astronomy inbox comes in. Oh, interesting. I get information from the Hubble Space Telescope. It's practical.
I think we might term the word Zionist. He probably takes a more traditional view of that word than I do.
Okay.
Definitely Jewish supremacist parties in the Russian Revolution. There's no doubt.
Yeah, but the Bolsheviks, they were the Zionists as well, no?
Well, they were Jewish supremacists. They were funded by Wall Street.
Yeah. The Bolsheviks outlaw Zionism. Jewish supremacist. Name one. Nope. What is that? It's interesting. We're learning a lot. Experience. Wall Street funded the March Revolution, but not the November Revolution. The one comes out of the other. And it's known. Oh, wait a minute. Papa.
Wall Street.
When you're listening to that is what mainstream is saying.
She pulled his money when the Bolsheviks took power. It didn't matter by then. It didn't matter. I'd like to know what Schiff got back from the Bolsheviks. I'll bet he may have cut off his money. He didn't pull anything. It was already done. He already financed them.
I wonder whether he has been reading or listening into the recording of Benjamin H. Friedman. He is explaining exactly what it was in those days, the Bolsheviks. And he is saying it were the Bolsheviks, the Zionists in Russia, who did the whole thing that started up. And I have to agree with that. And the man, Friedman, he has been explaining a lot more things. And I say it's a rare occasion that the man like that is daring to say such. That's Friedman was wrong. How do you know? Friedman was wrong. That's what I like to know. That's what I like to see on the screen. Yeah. Well, where's the next line?
We talked about Issachar earlier on.
In
Holland. Yeah. And I like to remember that little country that defeated the so-called Russians, who we know were the communists and the Bolsheviks. It was Finland, that little, just a tiny little insignificant, so it would seem. But they had a man who was their leader, and he called upon his people, ye sons of Issachar. He knew who they were in 1939. And they defeated the Russian onslaught. They'd had their minions in Finland trying to raise the people up against authority. And he called them, and with the Lord's help, with Yahweh's help, because he called upon Yahweh to help them, they defeated the Russians on that occasion. They had been promised help from America and from Britain, but of course, with the people who were controlling our countries, they couldn't send somebody against their own people, could they? But that little country, relying upon Yahweh, they came through triumphant. I mean, it's a wonderful story. And this was a little nation who knew they were sons of Issachar. I think it's a thrilling story. It isn't often told, but it ought to be more told out so that that would strengthen others amongst us to rise up against the enemy. Remember, our enemies are Yahweh's enemies. Yeah. And he tells us quite plainly in 2 Chronicles 19, he doesn't expect us to be on the side of his enemies. I mean, it's a wonderful relationship that we have with Yahweh. We are no
absolutely
in our own eyes, but my, we are his children, and he loves us, and he defends us, and we just look to him for that wonderful defense. We praise him and magnify his holy, lovely name, for he is our Yahweh. And we are his children.
Right, correct. Good job. Very good thing. That's what it is. Yeah.
Henry, you said Friedman was, you said Schiff was funding the socialists, but I don't, everything I've read told me that he funded Lenin directly. And even the German government, even the German government funded the Bolsheviks to a point. And fighting a war on three fronts, I can't say I would entirely blame them for that. But that's one of the unfortunate events in history. But much of their funding came right from Wall Street. Wall Street bankers funding wars and against other nations. Imagine that.
Yeah, sure. Sure, that's well known.
Lenin came from the damn Lower East Side of Manhattan. How did Schiff fund Lenin? Come on.
Henry, Jews were in America. They brag about it every day. Yeah, sure. Sure. Is there anyone who can deny that. I'm 100% agreeing, because I see it. It's also here and in England. Henry, Jews run America. They brag about it every day. Yeah, that's for June and
Maybe
Chris.
Maybe I get Trotsky and Lenin mixed up sometimes, but Schiff funded them. I don't have all my sources at hand. I didn't plan on talking about this topic, but I have the sources. They're on my Mein Kampf site, mk.org.
Yeah. Yeah, I was in New York, but not on the Lower East Side. He was in New York City for 6 weeks. Six freaking weeks. Yeah. Yeah. Later, it was in Zurich when the March Revolution happened, yeah? And then it was passed by Germany in a special train and went back. Yeah. It was... Yeah, surely I had to go along. I wanted to have him there. It's all one trap. The whole thing was a trap. A life dangerous trap. And say for in general spoken, the white ones, I don't mention the name of the land, but the white ones were cheated permanently, and they were used as gun fodder. And that was being done. We have seen it. And there was no reason to do so, or nobody was really interested. We know it from one of the chaps who was at one of the beaches in Normandy. He survived here in the war. He was so afraid. He was trained to shoot, and he was placed there at the beach, and he was never realizing that morning that all these ships were in front of his nose, and the only thing he was to be hired for, or used for, to shoot. And by being so afraid of it, he took his machine gun and he was just hammering blows on all these landing boats where the Americans and the other people came out. And it was a horror for him afterwards. And all his life long, it was a big problem for him. And he never could get rid of it. Sleepless nights and all that sort of horror, he have had it. So the man was ruined for the rest of his life. But he survived. He survived. And a lot of people told him that after all... He was doing his duty from his side, and he was not really blamed for it. They couldn't understand it. But he said, yeah, I was so afraid. I just was pulling the trigger, and it was rattling around, because it was either or. Yeah, it was either or. And he survived in that case. But for his life, he was ruined, and he was in a very bad situation. I wouldn't like to change it. Never. Oh. Whatever would have been doing in the same situation. I was born in England. My family was in England and South Africa. So we didn't see the war, actually, until we were in England. But if you would have been in England, in Germany and were placed in front of the fact either a bullet to throw your head or you were going to fight against the enemy. Ah, it's a horrible idea. And I have here a very good book in German language. It's now with friends of mine who are reading it about one of the soldiers, a German soldier, who was placed in war and he had to do his duty, and he said, I want to survive. That was his only thing he wanted. And he got an opportunity to be, first through his basic term in the army, which was a horror for the man. He was from the gymnasium. He was knowing something more. And how he was cheated and treated by his own kind of officers or bosses at that time in war. Dreadful. He had to pass 3 or 4 horrible months. And then he got an opportunity for an education and a training of a panzer or a tank driver. So he said, okay, I'll take that opportunity. And he was driving the tanks. And he had a lucky opportunity. Oh, lock in again. Okay, here we better do. It takes a few seconds. And the book is written so perfectly and so interesting because of his own words were used. And he said, I was so lucky that I was in the depot where the new tanks came in. And from there, they were transported by rail to the various warfares and war theaters. And he was the one who was delivering the tanks on the train and going by train through the country and delivering the tanks there at the places of the warfares. So he went to Italy, he went to France, he went to Hungary, even to Poland, far in Poland, into Russia even. Anytime he was just driving these tanks and no more. He didn't get a breast full of distinctions, etc. Not at all. He didn't want them even, because he said, when I want to have them, I can get them. I'll just have to do a bit more exercise and then I can get them. But he said, anytime when I see one of my fellow mates having a distinction, and he's raised in status, etc., in a short time after, he's dead. He said, I don't like it. I want to survive. And I'll survive only when I'll stay as low as possible at the ladder and do my job as a tank driver. And that's what he did. But he also had a lucky opportunity to be a photographer. And he was allowed to be in the tank, on the train, during the transport. So he had a marvelous view over all the fields and all the areas. And he could take pictures, whatever he wanted. These were such important pictures, because nobody has ever seen these pictures. And he had a book about it, and all these, a lot of these pictures are in, and the whole his story was in. And finally, by the end of the war, the last year, then he was more or less under pressure to be one of the men in the tank, and was going around with the tank as the communication man. And he was not driving the tank anymore, but he said, I'm not going to do the gun work. I'll take then the communication language, the telephones and the microphones whatsoever. He took care of that. Only in emergency he was having a machine gun in front of him. He never used it. But he said, that's the only way to survive. And in 44, in Russia, the tank got a full hit in which he was, and just the gun was located so that the turret was just open above his head. And the tank was in fire and flames, and he could only get out of the tank by means of the turret, which was in fire and flames. But if the tank, the turret was rotated some 10 or 15 degrees further above his head, then he wouldn't have been able to escape, and all was for nothing. But he could escape with tremendous burning woundings and burns on his hands and faces, etc. He has been in hospital for many months, and then he was cured, and he was sent out of the service. He said, oh, my dear goodness, thank you, Lord, I'm out of the service, no more, no more. And he finally was able to come on a transport at the last stage of the war, and he could surrender with a lot of other fellow mates in Austria. Oh, yeah, he had to go to Austria, and he could surrender to the Americans. And that was his lucky case, for he was indeed demobbed and demobilized, and he could come home in the area of Stuttgart, there where he was living. And he was lucky to get one of the best trains. He was extremely lucky to reach home, because the train after him, it was taken off to France with all the German soldiers, and the German soldiers had to work in France then, which came upon death for them. There was no way to escape. He was lucky. That's what it is. It's almost half 11 here.
I'm sorry. I can't even follow you. I'm sorry.
And that's the difficulty. I have read the book, and I can say that the story, what the German soldiers are telling you, is completely different.
Get to the point.
Now, that's what it is. We heard all the stories about Germany and the soldiers and all these notes and things. It's all nonsense. The truth is that few only are capable of telling what has happened really and how life was in that war. There was no pleasure at all. Only for few that were lucky to have a real good position where they could survive the war. This
I'm just wondering what has been.
And then they were able to tell you. The difficulty, it's in German, but I would like to sell it to everybody. But nobody is capable of reading it. That's what it is. Well, never mind, folks. Let's stop about the war. It's enough. It's better to keep that all in hands of Yvette. He knows.
I just can't make the connection between what you were rambling on about and what we were talking about. I'm sorry. I can't make a connection. I can't.
Never mind.
The last 30 minutes has just been a total blur to me. I'm sorry.
Yeah, because I'm a bit heated up at Henry,
I want to read a paragraph from The Third Rome. by Matthew Raphael Johnson, and he's quoting from Eustace Mullins. And I'm just going to read. You could go argue with Eustace Mullins. I'm not a historian. Yeah, you know, I haven't examined the documentary evidence of this myself. I admit getting this from other sources. I'm not a historian of the specific period.
Yeah.
Although Jacob Schiff's personal agent, George Kennan, had regularly toured Russia during the later part of the 19th century, bringing in money and arms for the communist revolutionaries, the grandson said that Schiff had spent $20 million about the Bolshevik Revolution. More concerted aid was called for to support an entire regime. Kennan also aided Schiff in financing the Japanese in the Russo-Japanese War of 1905. The Japanese doctored Kennan with the decorated Kennan with the Gold War Medal and the Order of the Sacred Treasure. In 1915, the American International Corporation was formed in New York. Its principal goal was the coordination of aid, particularly financial assistance to the Bolsheviks, which had previously been provided by Schiff and other bankers on an informal basis. The new firm was funded by J.P. Morgan, the Rockefellers, and the National City Bank.
Yeah.
And Johnson is, you know, you might scoff at Eustace Mullins, but I think that Matthew Raphael Johnson is a fairly meticulous scholar. I mean, you might want to argue with his specialty is medieval and Tsarist Russia.
Yeah.
Well, according to Johnson and Mullins, Schiff funded both.
Sure, sure.
I don't know Robert Conquest.
Yeah.
Oh, Robert and Conquest, that's two people.
Okay. Good people. Major historian of the Red Purges and Bolshevik January.
I'm sorry, Jim. Well, you know, Henry, I only have so many hours in my life, and I really concentrate on the New Testament, and everything else I do is extra. It is a side interest. I've been doing a program on Sunday nights with Sword Brethren. I've been doing a program on Sunday nights with Sword Brethren, and we've been talking about the Russia number one report, and we've been talking about the Frankfurt School, and we even had Kevin McDonald on one night, and we interviewed him on the Frankfurt School in his book.
Right. So if you begin.
And you know, a man's as accurate as his sources, and I believe in my and trust my sources, Henry. And you could dispute that if you want. You have every entitlement to dispute that. But we're just not going to agree.
Yeah, correct. Yeah.
If you can prove my source is wrong, then prove my source is wrong, but do it from documentary evidence.
Right. That's accurate.
Yeah, you know, and I'd be willing to accept that.
Why not? Yeah. If he is saying so, okay. Let him say, but
well, right.
We have to be accurate, okay? He has to be accurate. Wait and see. Yeah. Oh, he did accept it if proof that he didn't send the Bolsheviks.
Well, I mean, I would accept your evidence, and I would weigh it against what I've read. Yes. I'm not going to accept it without investigating it, but I would, if you can send me anything, I'll investigate the evidence. But there's still no doubt to me that Bolshevism wasn't the Jewish war on Christianity and the Jewish destruction of Christian Russia, which planned purposely on carrying that war out throughout Europe.
Yeah.
And that's the core of my own interest in it.
Correct.
And Schiff's funding wars against Russia overseas just the fact that he did it tells me what he's about anyway.
What is the only language outlawed in the Bolsheviks? I've never thought about that.
Well, there's no doubt that 80% of the or probably a greater number of that of Bolsheviks and the Russian Soviet proletariat was Jewish, Henry. I mean, you're not going to dispute that now, are you? Are you going to dispute that, Henry? Yes, Henry, most of the Russian proletariat was Jewish, and I have plenty of sources for that.
Mary, she's grandson, yeah, Chelsea Clinton. Mary, yeah, she's granddaughter, that's right, yeah. Uniforms is correct, yeah.
Read Russia number one report, Henry. Read the Russia number one report. The working class, they didn't go along with the revolution. They did it first. A lot of them were suckered into it, just like people are here.
Yeah.
They were forced and bullied into it.
It comes from the Latin proletariat. The world class is freaking proletariat. Peculiar.
Henry, I have plenty of
No.
There's plenty of documentary evidence for the things that I'm saying.
All the
Christians that were on the side of the Bolsheviks, and yes, the proletariat is the working class, and the Bolshevik working class, so-called working class, was all Jewish.
But the outlaw was
Jews and the people that they forced and held at gunpoint to go along with them, or starved out to go along with them, or bartered food to hire them into their army. All the volunteers were Jewish, Henry.
Yeah.
Or the greater number of them.
Yeah, known as well. But where is the documentation from these outlaw in Hebrew? Never heard.
That's my website, Henry. I don't know if you've been there or not.
There's
a lot of books that are facsimiles of original
Al Gore
sources or things written in the 20s and 30s.
They pass themselves off a Russian, at least in the beginning, right? They pass themselves off as Russian, yeah.
Hang on!
He has a telephone call. Where is looking up? Yeah. Oh, man, 10:30.
You're the count.
Yeah, you have 9:30 in
there.
Let's see how things go.
To look the book up. Yeah. It's a pity, Chris, that you don't have a screen in front of
what
you.
What you're doing. I've got no screen in front of me.
Yeah. Now, Chelsea is marrying another Jewish banker, Yuli Pons is saying so. Yeah. And then you're saying, no, I have to look up the book. Yeah, that's correct. Somewhere the book is. Wonder what kind of book that is. And who is the author of the book? You can expect all.
So, Matthew, June. Read a very interesting, or listened to a very interesting old tape of Swift about the Ark of the Covenant.
Yeah.
And she'll tell you about it, Jim.
Oh, yes.
Oh.
I have been very interested to hear this talk about the Ark of the Covenant and its reappearance. Well, we have been hearing little bits about its reappearance, supposedly. Already in the Israeli state. But Pastor Wesley Swift, when he talked about it, it was extremely interesting. If any of you could get hold of a copy of either the message, the tape that was taken of him speaking, or of the printout.
Which is on the New Ensign site.
It's on the New Ensign site, I believe. Well, it's a really excellent program entirely. And the bottom line is, Wesley Swift says that it wasn't just one Ark of the Covenant. We all know the one that we've all heard about. The one that was constructed to put into the tabernacle in the wilderness. Well, he says that wasn't the first one. I'm not going to spoil the story by telling you what the first one was, because I'm sure that you'll want to hear this for yourself. But he goes on to say that there will be a reappearance of the tabernacle, of the Ark of the Covenant.
And where is that written?
Pardon?
Where is that written?
Well, it was Wesley Swift's, his studies. I think you'll understand he made extensive studies.
Yeah, I understand. He kind of stuck his neck out a lot, too. I don't know.
But is it now, was it written now in the new ensign or the old ensign?
No, in the new ensign website.
Okay. Okay, but then I have to check
that.
Then William.
What he says at the end of the message is, he feels that this Ark of the Covenant, when it reappears, it will not be in Jerusalem. In that
correct.
Cursed city.
Yeah, I suppose so.
And it really is worth anybody's while to get hold of this and to read the copy or to hear the man himself telling the story because he takes you back in time further than most of us have been. He takes us forward where some of us hope to arrive someday, and it's absolutely tremendous. But it gives lie to all this false idea that the Ark of the Covenant is in that horrible city underneath where the cross was erected on the hill of Golgotha. But as I say, I have been absolutely thrilled when I have heard this message. And to such an extent, I put it straight on to hear it again. I spoke one day and heard it three times because it was absolutely wonderful. The teaching is tremendous. This man, the talk itself was given on the 25th of February in 1962. And we know lots of things have been revealed to us since those days in 62. But I would just recommend anybody and everybody to go to that website and get the whole of this printout. Because it's really wonderful.
Yeah. But what is it called? Wesley Swift?
It's the Ark of the Covenant. And its reappearance.
And its reappearance. Oops.
By Dr. Wesley A.
But it's on from the 62. That's a tape. That's a tape recording.
It's also on the PDF file as well.
That's easier. I can print it out on the new machine.
You'll find it on the new Ensign site, but it may as well be on one of the other sites of Bill's as well. Perhaps Clifton Emmenheiser. I think he's got a lot of Swift stuff as well.
Yeah.
No, it's definitely on the new Ensign site because I've sent it there myself and I've seen it.
Yeah, okay. So then I'll say just WW Ensign, whatever, and then let them run, see what comes.
Because the ensign, we have the new ensign, and that is in Crystal Union.
Yes.
Yeah, but is it also there? Then William should know.
Yes, it's going to be on that site.
Yes, it is there, because I think Bill, I'm sure Bill's got it on the new ensign site.
Okay, that means I have to take care.
But if you haven't got it, you can't find it, let me know and I'll send it to you.
Okay.
I won't be able to send it until I get back onto, my main broadband.
Most probably. How many hours is it driving there? It's about 5 degrees over the Earth globe down. From it's 55 up north for you, no?
Actually, it's just about as far as driving from Annika to Bad Tynak. It's actually driving from Bexhill. It's 340-odd miles.
Yeah, I see. There you are. Oh. And it takes you about 4 hours, 5 hours, 6 hours?
Oh, about 6-7 hours, depending on the traffic.
Yeah.
As you know, you get lots of hold-ups on the British roads.
And, of course, you have a little doggy to take walkies in between.
That's right. That's right. Once in a while.
Place.
Yeah. Yeah, that's
keep,
right, yeah.
To keep Trixie happy.
Yeah, that's it. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And we'll take it. He's going to stay a few days longer with you, June.
Yes, I think so.
I'll get chucked out.
Okay.
He doesn't mean till he gets chucked out. He means until he can't bear to not be near that connection for his laptop.
Correct. Yeah,
he's
correct.
All right here on the telephone. But
you're
missing out on a lot. And, of course, I'm missing out because he sends me the information.
So it will be.
This message, Dr. Swift, he takes you right back to your beginnings, our beginnings. And lots of things to learn that... That very often identity people don't all know quite so much about their early beginnings as what he's able to divulge to us.
Right. Yeah. Oh, easy enough. Yeah, correct. No, I'll pick it up and I'll see what you can print of it. And otherwise, I have to sit behind the machine here. But I prefer if it is if it's a long, is it a long article, a long PDF, or how many sides is it?
So you've got the, June, just tell you how many pages.
Yes, I think it was 20A4.
Okay, now there's no problem. I can print it both sides, that
it's
makes it easier.
It's certainly worth having it printed out. Oh, no, 15, maybe just about 16, actually. But it's worth having it printed out so that you can turn the pages and have another look.
Yeah, the room. Yeah, okay. No worry. I can print that easily. That's no problem.
Yes.
Yeah, no, okay. That's best. I'll try to do so. Yeah, no worry. No, I got another text lately, which was also very important to read. What was that? I get so many informations in. and even from chat, I get articles in. And they're very, very interesting to study. For there's so much we need to know right now, because it's now coming in our hands, which was formerly unthinkable, and that makes it so interesting. But it could also the recording of Lucas.
It's a pity, Matthew, it's a pity you can't persuade the ladies in Holland to join in.
So far, I have been trying with Chetta, and I wrote her and also another email that we were going to be here again. And she is maybe listening in, but I don't know.
She
likes to have... Annika's on the computer?
Yeah, she has the
means. Oh, she could. Yeah, she has the means to do. Yeah. I should have to call her. She would be one of the easiest ones to come in. Yeah, maybe she doesn't dare or whatsoever, or has no time, or another reason. I don't know. I would be able to call her and ask if she has heard about it or what is it. Yeah,
well,
she must have known about it. I can ask her.
I sent her the details.
Okay.
But whether also she got them or not, I'll have to ring her sometime.
Yeah. Let me see. Yeah, I mean, if I have the time, I'm not forgetting it. It's more important. Otherwise, I could try to do it for the coming Sunday that she's listening in. But then I have to have the details. Oh, yeah, I'll send her over then. Then I'll just send her over the entrance where she has to move on. Yeah, that must be possible. For Jetta, yeah, she is doing her best, but she has to do a lot. That editorial work.
She's very busy.
Being then able, she's always very busy. And I persuaded her a few times, and she has been able to try it in the beginning and couldn't come through. Because she is having her connection, her browser is, Lookout. And then she has to have a password for coming into Windows and going further and further. I said, what kind of stupid system is that? I said, whenever I hear about Outlook, I only have problems. I simply dump Outlook, go on Windows straightforward via MSN. That's the easiest way from here on as well. From the beginning on, and I knew I hear problems from others where I never heard about. Just take MSN and go on. But yeah, she's still having that old browser, and well, for whatever reason, I don't know, I have no idea. But if you have to climb in from one stage to the other, to the other, to the next, this is horrible to do. Okay, so I can try it again, and that's it. More I can't say.
And also, pity. Pity Wolfgang can't connect up.
Yeah, I don't know why.
Because he does listen to, I mean, I know he's listening to Eli's programs, and I think also Bill Fink's to Seedline one.
Okay, yeah. I wrote him the other day a message that I was going to listen in here tonight on Sunday as well. So, yeah, he didn't inquire. So what about? I don't know. Maybe he's just as guesty. I don't know all the guests.
Oh, did you receive his link he sent showing you the new dollar bill that they're going to circulate?
No, I don't know.
Yeah, it's a new dollar that's already being printed.
Oh, yeah, the one I saw. Yeah, correct. Yeah, that's what
is
I saw.
Is there a picture of Obama on it? That's all I want.
Yeah, I don't know.
The big O, like the Obama O for the one and for the O and
no.
One.
No, it was a statement on it. It was a statement on it.
I think it was Washington or somebody, wasn't it?
Like that. Not this peculiar. But which one it was? It could be even pain, I don't know. But certainly not this Obama. No. he will never get a place.
And the man pictures turning in his grave at the thought of being connected with this new money.
Yeah, that's right. That's terrible. If you have seen the modern thing, it looks like the more or less like the euro in some certain ways. No. The old dollar is the old dollar.
I wouldn't be surprised if the new dollar wasn't the euro.
Yeah. Maybe for a few years.
Has it not got a euro written on?
No, it's a dollar.
it's really a dollar. Yeah. Now, they might create a black site on it. I don't know. Yeah, that's peculiar. It's awful. Well, okay, it all has to happen in these end times days. Step by step, it has to go wrong further and further downhill, unfortunately. Yeah. What would you do? Wait and see. If the Lord, it's his time, then he is stopping all of it.
that we like to see it. We don't have that much time to live. Yeah. And I like to knock at the door and to get more information. I like to have more information on what did we miss. Where were we right? Where were we wrong in our information? And you can only get that from knocking at the door. At the Lord's door, he's the only one who can give you the information. Yeah. We are cheated everywhere.
So, Bill, you've had no more trouble from that person trying to get you to take books off your website?
Well, you know, I'm not taking anything off my website just on somebody's word in an email. You know what I mean? There's 900...
I don't know if Judith told you, because I've been out of sort of internet connection for a bit.
It's a shame, but, it's
That particular person who she wanted taken off actually advertises in the Nexus magazine. I don't know if you've heard of the Nexus magazine. And he puts his own name and address in there. I mean, it's not in every month, but...
Well, right. And you know, I told her that first, if he had a problem with the Stevens Books advertisements in the New Ensign on my website, that he was going to have to take, with his name being mentioned there, he was going to have to take that up with Stevens Books.
Exactly.
Period. He's going to have to take that up with Stevens Books. Don't take it up with me. I want nothing to do with that. That's between him and Stevens Books. And I went on Stevens Books websites, and they are actually selling his books.
Yes, I know.
So as long as they're selling his books, they have a full right to advertise his name as one of the authors that they carry. So they don't have a leg to stand on there. They don't have a leg to stand on. Now,
personally, I think this person probably hasn't even contacted a so-called uncle. He probably knows nothing about it.
Let me finish. Let me continue. As far as articles written under a pen name, If you want to claim articles that were written under a pen name, well, that's fine, but why were the articles written under a pen name? And how do I know that those articles belong to that person just because they're claiming they do? The articles written under their own name, I told them to take the articles, all the articles that were written that this person claims a copyright to, and send me the evidence that they have a right to these articles, and then I'll consider my options under the Fair Use Act, under the Fair Use construct of the United States copyright law. Because I'm not governed by the laws of Britain. I don't care about Britain. I'm being honest. I only care about American copyright law. That's all I care about, and what what my responsibility is as a citizen of this country.
Yeah, correct.
So if they can show me that they have the rights to these articles, which are posted elsewhere on the internet, then I'll consider what's fair and what's just. But I'm not taking anything off one of my websites that somebody just says, oh, I got a copyright to that, or oh, I wrote that. You have to take it off your site. No, you're going to have to demonstrate to me that you hold the rights to that.
Yeah.
I'm not taking anybody's word for it.
And we all think there was an ulterior motive for it anyway.
Well, there's definitely an ulterior motive because these articles are posted elsewhere on the internet.
Yeah.
So the person that actually has, and this is, somebody saying that they're related to this author. Well, the author's still alive. And if he contacted me and directly and persuaded me, that these articles were indeed his, and especially the ones written under a pen name, right? I'm not taking his. I wrote that. Yeah, right. Okay. Well, show me. And if he can show me that, then I can be reasonable.
And then if the concern was about his identity being exposed, you wouldn't disclose the pseudonym, would you?
Well, absolutely not. That's absolutely contrary. He's exactly right. Well, the person that wrote me, asking me for the strictest confidence and not to, I told them, I informed them of this. If you contact me again about this, I'm publishing all of your letters on the front page of my website unless unless your reason for contacting me is to produce the evidence that I'm asking for that you have the rights to this material.
Yeah.
In other words, I don't want any more vain or idle threats, and I don't want any bullshit. I want the evidence that you have the right to this material you're claiming a right to, and then I'll be reasonable. But I'm not taking anything off one of my sites on just on somebody's word in an email. That ain't happening. Because most of the material on my websites, a lot of people would love to see disappear, and it's not going to.
Yeah.
Well, we don't believe that the author has any idea of what his relatives about, because, as you say, his articles are there with his name on in other places.
They're all over the place.
He writes.
I've checked it out. I sat and Googled it.
Has all kinds of things published.
Exactly.
And there's never been a fuss like has been created over this. But we think that, as Chris says, there's definitely an ulterior motive.
And I mean,
that's got nothing to do with you, Bill, in reality. It's just this person takes all kinds of things on her own bat, what she'll do and what she won't. However.
And not only that, I printed off the UN science off the site to send to this author. This lady wanted taken off. And it has my name and address on the back, and he's thanked me for them. And I think if he had any concern, he would have contacted me direct and say, oh, do you know who the publisher is? Can you get it altered?
Yeah.
But he certainly never contacted me direct. And also, June is in contact with him. I mean, I think he would have been onto the phone to June as well.
Well, he frequently sends me articles, and I have a very good relationship with him over the telephone. He's an extremely nice person. But
he tells you the past.
Yes. when I've asked him about certain things that he sent me, you know, I said, I know a person who would be very interested to read this article. Would you mind if I passed it on? He said, anything I have sent to you, June, you please pass it on wherever you think that people would be helped by it. So you can't get anything. And that was just the last time I was in contact with him, was just before Christmas Day, 2009.
Well, it don't matter to me one way or the other, but if you could get something in writing from him or get some sort of an agreement from him, I mean, I would keep that confidential until the day I needed it. But, you know, this woman isn't going to intimidate me. I just don't get intimidated. I'm not the kind of guy you're going to try to intimidate.
But she hasn't managed to intimidate me either. And she certainly can try.
She tried, but I basically told her to go to hell until she came up with
I don't think that the gentleman concerned would have a heap of idea what she's up to, because he'd probably be horrified.
Yeah.
And I mean, especially to give away his pseudonym. I mean, what's the point in putting something out under another name if somebody goes and proclaims who it is? It's absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah.
Well, she is absolutely ridiculous, and I think that I shook her tree with a couple of my answers. She feigned being offended pretty good, at least. I don't know.
Oh well.
I wish that I thought Dorcas would make it into this call. It'd be great to talk to her. I guess her new phone service didn't get hooked up yet. Maybe, I don't know.
Who's Dorcas?
Betty.
Oh, Betty. Oh, yes.
And she was hoping that yesterday the work would be done so she could get on.
Well, okay. Here's what's happening. On the 18th, I'm going to Virginia. I'm driving to Virginia on Thursday the 18th. I think Thursday's the 18th, right? Well, I would like to leave right after the call, but I'd like to move it up a little in time. I'd like to make it just an hour or two earlier. And I don't know how early you would be willing to do it. I mean...
yes, that would, I mean, as far as I'm concerned, that'd be no problem at all.
Yeah, maybe from noon to 2:30 or something.
Yes. So that
okay,
would be 5 o'clock our time.
Yeah, it would be at 5 o'clock. If that's okay with
yeah, 6 o'clock here. Yeah,
oh,
6 o'clock
okay.
here. Okay.
Okay, just for the 18th. I mean, we can do it that early every time. I mean, it don't matter to me, but I would like to, I have a 6 or 7 hour drive.
Yeah.
So you don't want to be setting off early
yeah.
as you can.
Yeah. Well, it's if I could get out of here at 3, that'd be great, and be there by 9:30, 10 o'clock probably.
Yes, lovely.
Yeah. Okay. Right on. 18.
We wish you Yahweh's blessing on your journey, Bill.
Yeah, I'm going to see my son.
Yeah.
I'm not going to do the Friday and Saturday programs with Eli that weekend. I mean, it's my first weekend off to talk to you in, 14 months.
It seems you're on the you're on the radio nearly every day of the week, aren't you, Bill?
It seems to be. I mean, the Sunday night thing with Sword Brethren it seems to be.
Well, we try and arrange our work to coincide with your broadcasts. And I tell you, it's a busy life. Between the ones we can hear.
They're all
out downloading the ones we can't actually tune into and hearing them again.
Yeah.
It's a valuable fellowship.
I don't know where you download them from. If you download them from Chris DeGenia, they're a lot smaller than if you download them from TalkShoe.
Oh, yes, I do where I can. Yes, and then I put them onto a CD in MP3 format and send them up to June, and you can get about 30 or 40 hours messages on one CD, so that keeps it going for a week.
Let me see. Have you listened to them all yet? I said, no, Chris, they're only 24 hours in the day, and some of them I spend asleep. But, I mean, it's absolutely tremendous to have these things so firsthand. And we can learn day by day. There's always something new.
Sure.
Well, that's good. I'm glad you like them.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I'm going to sleep. Betty's time. It's about past 11 o'clock in the night.
Oh, I thought you might be going out to have a look through your telescope.
It was cloudy in the evening, so I don't expect anything. It's clouded out for over a month now. We haven't seen any star except in the evening when I was just walking in the village. Hey, stars. Well, that's something new. I haven't seen them in a month. Yeah, bad luck.
Seen a little green men flying around up there? Let us know when that happens.
Well, we see green things, but we do call them frogs. Yeah. But in the telescope, I never had such a thing. No, fortunately not. I like to have the stars in. That's enough. What's going to happen in the sky?
I'm just kidding you. Usually, astronomy and UFOs and all the Art Bell stuff, all, hand in hand.
Yeah, sure. Nah, but this is practical astronomy. This is nonsense. We are just observing the light which comes straight from the Lord in the instrument. Nobody is going to put his hand in between except for the harp rubbish. The atmosphere is disturbed for the next whatever time.
Thanks
to the observations, but we're not getting anything. Yeah, sure.
But
I have it now here.
He mentions the flying chariots.
Yeah.
But You'll have to get that something.
Oh, I'll pick it up from the net. It can't be a big problem. Must be possible.
Yes.
Okay, folks.
Yeah.
I'm going to stop it. And otherwise it's 12 o'clock and, 6 hours later I have to come out of my bed. Work is there. Okay, folks. It was a very fine time.
I would have thought you'd
be about the 18th
stopping.
At 6 o'clock.
Okay, take care. Yahweh bless.
Yahweh bless.
Okay, Yahweh bless, folks.
Bye, Matthew.
Okay,
bye.
Cheerio. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
It should have been.
It's unfortunate Judas couldn't get in today. I don't know. He's not even
Hello?
Here.
It's William. It's only Matthew that closed down.
Oh, sorry.
I said it's unfortunate
Chris
Judas
is just saying,
get in.
I think this should have been called Matthew's program today.
And Betty, if you're listening, I'll hope to hear from you on the 18th.
Yes.
At 5 p.m.
Sorry, Bill, we have to have an advanced course on how to get into talk show.
Well, it's hard. I mean, I tried about 20 times to get in today. It's hard. Sometimes it's the software. I mean, it's a free service, right? We can't complain about it.
Yes.
Betty just left.
We had the job just dialing in as well.
Oh, yes. I'd
set the lines in.
I had to try quite a few times. I think actually it took me 10 minutes before I actually got through. So even waiting for 10 minutes, it's worth it. But sometimes you can just dial in and they accept you straight away and that's it. But although when I've dialed back, I've got in straight away. You know, when I've put it down ready for me hour.
Well, the other thing I was going to mention to you, Bill, I don't know whether you've already got it, but I made it up into a booklet, The Speech of Hitler on Danzig. I don't know if you've seen that one.
Yeah, I'll take it I don't think I have it.
It's already sent down the line to you.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I've been slack. I haven't had time to get there. And I had I'm going to be honest with you. I had a woman, and she's an excellent woman, and she started putting documents up on that New Ensign site, and she put a few documents up. But what happened was her husband was not very agreeable to Christian identity and actually got very offended by some of the thing. You know, he's a mainstream Christian. Got very offended by some of the things on the website, and she had to step back from helping, you know, from helping
contributing.
Out.
Yes.
Yeah. Right. And it's a shame, but that happens sometimes.
Oh yes. Well, we know that lots of them will be offended, but they were offended at what our Savior was saying when he was walking the earth, and so he said. They hated me, so they'll not love you. And we've got that to know it will happen.
So sometime we have to have another go so I can, you know, like I did go through with it with you a bit, so perhaps, you know, sometime I can put some things up there, save you the bother.
Yeah, that would be, you know, all the documents are sitting. You have access to all those documents in the FTP space, right?
Yeah.
I think so, but I don't remember. I'd have to go back and review what I've done with that site. But, I mean, there's 10,000 documents sitting there, and it's a lot of work.
Yeah.
I'm not up for it, but you can only do 10,000 documents so quickly.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's why I had them on the database, you know, so you can look them up quickly.
Yeah, well, once you know, my Christogenia sites, they're pretty much fully developed now, and there's not a whole lot more I'm going to add to them. I have a lot of material to add to the Mein Kampf site, but now I have somebody hooked up with with an accountant that's helping me manage all the photographs and things like that. And he's keeping a photo. He's going to keep the image and the media library for me. So that's a relief. And aside from that, I have to do I have to get involved with a new website project for Eli that somebody else has already started and done a lot of work on. But I have to get involved with it. I have to straighten out all the technical issues with it. And as soon as that's done, I'll be able to I'm hoping that's done by March, and then I'll be able to give the new Insight some more attention. That's what I'm hoping.
And by the way, I've sent down, I think I've put it under a folder for Eli, for Bill and Eli, because he wanted to put, my Gog and Magog slides on his site. I've been redoing them, changing the, increasing the text size and more illustrations. I think I'm about halfway through now.
Now, did you see the way I turned them into a flash file to put on the internet?
Yeah, very good.
Yeah, you saw that?
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, it could stand some improvement, but it was only little free software programs that I picked up here.
Yeah. I did play around with one that sort of turns them into like a video, so you actually see the animation of the the text, it sort of comes down like a typewriter, and you get the picture come up and the text, that sort of thing. But it's quite a fiddly job doing it. I think that, I don't know if you've heard of it, Moya was the program I used.
M-O-Y-E-A?
Yeah.
I've played with some of this software and I was turned off by it.
Oh.
It didn't work right. It didn't. They had a YouTube downloader that just never worked the way it was supposed to. I couldn't download a single video from it. I swear. It just didn't work like it was advertised.
Oh, I managed to change a PowerPoint into a video format using their software. But as you say, I don't use it for downloading. I've got Orbit for downloading. But what I need to do is to get a program to convert, flash files into something else, because most people can't play them on their computer. If you put them onto a CD to pass them around, they can't watch them.
Flash files?
Yeah.
I watch them all the time right on my computer. I change all my stuff into flash files.
Oh, yeah. I know you can on mine. I mean, like I had to download that one, it's like a traffic cone on it in order to play it on my computer. You can play it remotely on YouTube, but as soon as you download it into your computer, at least mine, the Microsoft Media won't play it. But it will if it's like an AVI file or something like that, or JPEG 4. So whether you've got a different operating system to me.
Well, I have Windows XP. I have three operating systems here. I got three computers. It don't matter. But I use... I use flash files all the time. They're my preferred format because they work with all my internet software. Yeah, my players on Chris Degenia, they can play other formats, but I don't like the MP4 format or the AV because they want to use the Microsoft or the Apple QuickTime plugins and they're slow and they don't always render correctly on every browser's pages. And not everybody has Apple QuickTime either. Adobe Flash is 99% of the world's computers have Adobe Flash.
I've got Adobe. I mean, if I watch a video, your Flash, I log in, I can see it fine on my computer, But if I was to download that and put it and it be a flash file, it wouldn't play it as a flash file. It only seems to play it if you're accessing it on a remote site. You see what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But with this other one,
I double click on a flash file. I mean, it comes right up. I don't understand why everybody should be able to play flash files. I mean,
I can't. but it does when I use that cone. You know what you told me about it. That will play it.
I want to see what I'm loading them in right now. I don't even know what program plays when I load one right now. I got to go find a flash file on my computer. Here's one.
Just hang on a sec.
Microsoft Windows Media Player plays.
All this talk of computers, you know, Bill, is way over my head. I'm not into computers at all.
Yeah, well, that's, again, you know, most people from your generation didn't take to them. It's just a, you know, it's a lifestyle thing. It's not a problem.
Yes.
I mean, my mother kind of knows a little bit, but my grandmother, of course, doesn't want anything to do with it. And she's 91, but she wouldn't have anything to do with it.
Oh, well, I'm a long way from being as old as your grandmother, but I still am not. Although, until recently, I had cataracts on my eyes, and that would have precluded me from anything on the screen.
Yeah, that's a problem.
Well, now I've had them removed, so I'm much better. I'm seeing things the way the Lord meant them to be seen.
Well, the computer,
so that's good.
It's just a communications tool, but it's a powerful one if it's used properly. I mean, like everything else, it's abused for pornography.
Did you check that out, Bill?
What's that, Chris?
Chris is back.
Hello?
Yes.
Well, was it that traffic cone program you plays it?
No, Microsoft Media. The traffic cone program, that will play FLV files. That's not the traffic cone program. That's called the VLC Media Player, right?
That's the one that's the only one that will play my flash files. The media won't open it.
Windows Media Player won't open them?
No.
Well, I play flash files with Windows Media Player all the time.
But it will do if I access it from a remote site.
Well, right-click it and click Open With and select Media Player from the list and see what happens.
Yeah, I could do that.
Well, I mean, VLC Portable might just be the default, but that don't mean that Media Player won't play them.
Hey, Chris. Chris is looking after it for you.
Get into it.
Okay, I'm going to end this call.
Open with, I've just clicked on it, Media Player.